Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep begins now.
I thought we were going to be reasonable about this.
Reason is going to talk to us about reason now.
Yeah, that's a joke.
Which one you figure attract us?
The ugly one, sir.
Could you be more specific?
Do we look reasonable to you?
Well, looks can be deceiving.
Not as deceiving as a low-down, dirty deceiver.
Well said. Wasn't that well said, Zoe?
Had a kind of poetry to it, sir.
You want I should shoot him now, Marco?
Wait till they tell us where to put the stuff.
That's a good idea. Good idea. Tell us where the stuff's at so I can shoot you.
Point of interest? Offering to shoot us might not work so well as an incentive as you might imagine. Anyway, we've hidden it. So, you kill us, you'll never find it.
Found you easy enough.
Yeah, you did, didn't you? How much they paying you?
Huh?
I mean, let's say you did kill us. Or didn't. There could be torture. Whatever. But somehow, you found the goods. What would your cut be?
7%, straight off the top.
7? Huh.
What?
Nothing. Not a thing. No, I just... Does that seem low to you?
It does, sir.
That ain't low.
Stop it.
7%, standard.
Okay. Zoe, I'm paying you too much.
Why? What does she get?
Knock it off!
No, forget I said anything. I'm sure you're treated very well. You get the perks, got your own room. No? You share a bunk.
That one.
Really?
Game. This ain't funny.
Yeah, I ain't laughing.
You move on over to this side, we'll not only show you where the stuff's at, we'll see to it you get your fair share. Not no sad 7.
Private room?
Gene!
Your own room, full one of the kitchen, whole shot.
Gene, I ain't asking.
Shut up. A bigger room.
It is 19 minutes after the hour of 1, and this is the month of September in the year of our Lord, 2010. Thank you for coming along, making it part of your listening day. We are live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of the Emerson News Network, the home of all things good and amusing. My name is Rick Emerson. It is Tuesday, September 14th, 2010. This is the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy. Thank you for drawing near, that ye might be entertained. If you'd like to join us today via the telephone, you can do that. It is 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. If you would like to chime in with your thoughts, observations, comments, musings of an ironic nature, recipes, whatever it is you might wish to share with us, it's 503-505-6964. You can also text us, as Rachel just did, via Skype. The text name at Skype is Rick Emerson Show. Oh, and where Rachel says, best intro ever. I love that scene. Well, that's why we do these things, Rachel. We don't just take your 32 cents a day for granted. Oh, no. No, we work every day. Rolling is sort of amusement-based stone up a hill like a tap-dancing Sisyphus. If you can imagine such a thing. If you can't, it's okay. I'll make some sort of a sketch later on. I'll put it online. Also, I'm probably not going to do that. You can email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. What is online, by the way, if you go to, I believe it's at rickemerson.com, although we had a little issue last night with some of the HTML on the site. It was a little bit of a deleting that happened. So I meant to restore some of that, but it may not technically have been done yet. Point is, if you go to the Facebook and I believe also the Twitter feed, you can see, I guess I got an amazing number of requests for this. You can see a picture of the huge penis that's drawn. Really, and I can, here's the thing, and I uploaded like 5 different photos based on the show yesterday, because I just, you know, I just got the, and it's not going to be another phone discussion day. That day will come next month when Dawn gets her iPhone. By the way, just because I'm a charitable lad, because I'm a Christian man, Dawn, I am not at this juncture going to mention the fact that my wife had to take her Android phone back to the store and have it completely wiped and reset.
Really?
I'm just saying it would be wrong of me. It would
no,
be
that
wrong
would
of me to mention that.
Gloaty.
But I wouldn't do that. No. Rick Emerson's not a man who gloats. You know why? Because gloating is not something that Rick Emerson does.
It's not Christian.
No, it's not. It's not a thing that one associates with a positive character trait. So as a result, I am not going to engage in that behavior, however tempting it might be.
I'm proud of you.
Anyway, so I'm just now kind of getting the phone thing figured out. I managed to find out yesterday after the show. I guess we were off the air when I deduced that I had not, in fact, inadvertently taken a picture of my own genitals, which I thought that I might have done. And I know that doesn't seem like a thing you could do inadvertently, but then again, you're not me.
I'm actually a little disappointed.
Really?
When you showed me, look, no, it's really just a picture of the wallpaper.
Were you under the impression that I would show it to you if it was a picture of my area?
No.
Okay, because that would not happen. That wouldn't be a...
No, and nor would I actually really want to see it.
Yeah, I mean...
But so I kind of liked the idea, though, that you had accidentally taken a picture of yourself.
You just found the idea compelling from a misadventure point of view.
Right.
All right. Yeah, because I've been in the bathroom and I was trying to multitask, which is to be human is to parallel process, right? And so I was engaging in an active evacuation and... Well, what do you want to say? It's not like I was, you know.
I mean, at least you're being clear about it. Because yesterday when you were talking about stuff, you didn't actually.
I was
you started saying
part
you were in the
cheesy.
Bathroom, you were this, and you were trying. Well, when I first thought you were in there, I assumed you were doing what one does when one is standing. So I was trying to figure out how you were doing something with your phone while you were using your other hand ostensibly to point and shoot. And.
Wait, hold on. But I see.
And then I figured out when you were saying that you were holding your phone and trying... Oh, well, you had to have both hands free, so therefore...
Okay, now I don't really know what you're referring to.
I assumed you were peeing when you first said that you were...
Which was the case. Which was the... What do I look like, a savage?
So I'm assuming you then need at least one hand...
Sometimes 5 or 6, sister. Let me
tell you. Has your wife actually trained your wife has trained you to do this sitting down, which is something I think all men should do, but most men don't.
To do this, I don't even. I am now so lost in this conversational and urinary thicket. We should revisit this here later on because it's become very confusing. And if we plunge on ahead here, it really is going to become just actual literal bathroom humor.
Right. We don't want to do that.
I mean, the humor part,
again.
I guess, is sort of a... That's just a thing that I would be angling for. It would at the very least be an elongated bathroom talk. Anyway, so I was in the bathroom yesterday, and I thought that I had accidentally taken a photo of my business. And I spent the entire... Once I brought it up, I then spent the rest of the show thinking about the phone in my pocket and wondering, what's on there, anyway? What sort of a picture is residing on there? Because as I think I described it yesterday, I had been in the bathroom right before the show, taking care of things and so forth. Because it's not like during Legion of News, we don't take any breaks or whatever. No. It's a solid hour. And I'd heard this sort of the sound of the shutter closing, which is the sound that the iPhone makes or whatever you may take a picture. And, so then the phone is in my pocket and I'm doing the show wondering if I have accidentally taken a photo of something private. And then you've done the thing where you do the pocket dial, right? Where you lean on the phone and you actually call somebody. Well, because with the iPhone, there's an infinite number of things that one could conceivably do if one is pocketing. Are you engaging in a conversation about my penis?
No, Yes. That's what I do during the show, Rick, is I talk to others about your penis.
Your eyes got very glittery as you were typing on the screen just now. Every time I would talk about the bathroom, you would turn back to the screen.
No, right before we came on, I had typed up the top 5.
Yes.
And then I said... Send it to the printer. No, I don't need to save this. And, of course, it didn't go to the printer, right. So now I have to type it up again.
Okay.
And I'm doing it while we're talking. I'm looking up and responding, then typing.
You could do it later.
I could do it later.
That way you could give me your undivided attention and gaze at me adoringly while I speak.
Dear Lord, you are such an attention whore.
That's true.
All right.
Hey, what is it with microphone and headphone cables that they're always tangling? Why can't we develop some sort of technology that keeps headphone cables from becoming ensnarled?
And this got all tangled up with the lanyard that
Seriously,
I have my...
So your dork lanyard that you wear around, and I do too, by the way. So that is now tangled with the headphone cable. And the headphone cable, which is it's sort of the coiling kind, which I think is actually done specifically so that it doesn't become tangled.
Well, you have the coiling kind. I just have a long, thin wire that's like 10 feet long, and I'm only sitting like a foot and a half from the plug. So I always have like way extra cordage.
The thing about mine is, it's just like the mine again is actually designed theoretically so that that doesn't happen. When we get done with the show, I take the headphone cable. I don't wrap it around the headphones. You're not supposed to do that, but I do arrange it very carefully, and I put it in a drawer, which presumably nobody else is screwing with. And then I shut it. And then the next day when I open it, it's like some sort of auditory gnome has gotten into the drawer, and they've decided just to put everything in these knots that are. I mean, it's like a knot that you would use, to, like, stand fast if you're in the middle of a gale in the Atlantic Ocean. It just doesn't make any sense at all.
They're like Christmas tree lights. They just have this whole life of their own, having some kind of party after you put them in the box.
Seriously. Well, in any event, so I spent the latter part of yesterday's program, because we're sitting here in the studio, and I can't believe I didn't tell you this at the top of yesterday's show, but I mentioned halfway through that I had accidentally taken a photo while in the bathroom. So that was embarrassing enough, and then... I'm actually wondering every time I shift in my seat if somehow my pants are rubbing against the phone in such a fashion as to accidentally then send a copy of what I believe to be at that point a picture of my area on the phone to unknown persons in my address book. You know, if I like lean over to pick up a piece of paper off the floor and then suddenly I'm sending, Les Moonves and my mom. Like a picture of my unclothed pelvis.
That seems like it would be sort of a flaw in the iPhone's design.
Yes.
If it is possible to actually do that.
It's not like it's outside of the realm of possibility that the iPhone might in some way be designed with a flaw, though. I think we've all learned. So, you know. Anyway, so we get off the air and I go into the kitchen. What is the first thing I do? Do I make it an assessment of the day's broadcast? Do I check my email to see if maybe important communications have come? Do I immediately upload the programs to the archive so that the people... No, I'm checking my phone, scanning through, to see if I have taken a photo of, like, my testicles by mistake. And then if I did... Did I lean on my phone in such a way that I, like, sent pictures of my junk to half the people that I know? I did not do any of those things, by the way. So just, you can all breathe easy there. Coming up today, we have a penis watch. Also, Geek Watch coming up later on. We have the top five worst songs recorded by an actor. As the top five worst songs recorded by an actor coming up today. We'll also have another installment of Pop Culture Authority. This one, a listener-submitted question. Listener Rick wants to know, what do the other letters in the CBGB's club name stand for? And we'll talk about that. Also, Lisa Wood and Brian Wood, the proprietors of Big Ass Sandwiches, will join us in the studio around 2 o'clock. That is like half an hour from now. Right now, I give you no better than 50-50 odds that they're bringing food, by the way. I mean, if I had to lay, like, the Vegas line right now, I'm saying it's even odds whether they come equipped with it with, like, the pork hammer.
It is lunchtime. They should bring us sandwiches.
Yeah, I know. And and they were on Outlook Portland this morning, and it seemed, first of all, we taped that show at, like, 9 a.m., and it's... I'm not saying there's ever a bad time for the pork hammer, but there are certain times that are better... The pork hammer, by the way, is a sandwich, lest you think I was talking about... Anyway... There are certain times of day better than others, so I can almost... And plus, they don't open till like 11, so I can get the idea that they were not equipped with, some sort of hunger-satiating product when they came to the studio in Beaverton. And I'm also not going to bear a grudge if they don't bring one now.
No.
I'm just saying, it seems that if they want us to be able to properly discuss the current state of their business and perhaps paint an auditory picture for the audience of what one might be able to acquire at Big Ass Sandwiches were one to go there as a choice for lunch. You know, what better way to do that than to bring us a huge pile of meat between two pieces of bread?
And just on the off chance that they do that, I am not eating my lunch that I brought with me, my leftover tuna casserole and my baby carrots. I have left them in the fridge.
Here's the, I will say this, though. You, at the beginning of yesterday's show, actually gave me, was it before or after the show, you gave me a bag of cookies?
Yeah, well, I give them to you before the show, but you don't ever eat before the
they
show.
They were fantastic.
Were they? You really liked them?
They were a little crisp, yeah. but not for my taste, because I like things to be more on the crisp side. The average cookie consumer might want them to be a little more soft. I'm saying for me, they were perfect, and they tasted fantastic. Very uniformly shaped as well. Do you do the thing, what do you form them by hand, or do you like cut them out with a glass or something, or
no,
like an actual cookie cutter?
I use a portion scoop. I have various sizes of portion scoops, and it's actually the same size scoop I use for the Centers for Truffles. I just use a little bit more for the
They're
the
fantastic.
Cookies.
Is it true, Dawn, that your cookies are available at Big Ass Sandwiches?
They are. They are gigantic cookies at Big
awesome.
Ass Sandwiches, though. I actually use I think it's like a 2/3 cup scoop, measuring scoop, like a big ice cream scoop size. So they're, because the cookies are $2, and it's a big ass sandwich, so they should also have big ass cookies. And so they do.
They were fantastic. So we'll talk to Lisa Wood and Brian Wood about Big Ass Sandwiches. They are coming up on their 1 year anniversary of launching that business. So that'll be coming up about half an hour from now. Dawn Taylor's also tracking the following stories for you on this Tuesday.
A faith healing couple is ordered to take their child to the doctor. A man nearly loses his one good arm helping an alligator. And an increasing number of students can't pay their student loans,
awesome.
According to the government.
So that is all coming up today, as well as a Geek Watch, a Penis Watch, and other. You're waving at
me. Yeah, I was going to say I also have some messages from listeners when we have them.
Would you like to pass those along now?
I would.
Let's begin the program with a word from the audience.
All right. From the text box to begin with, we do have the lovely Jen says... Just taped a printout of the I Heart My Muslim President to the office door of whack job conservative co-worker currently on vacation with his mail order bride. I'll probably have forgotten about it by the time he gets back.
Oh, yeah. So that's I keep forgetting to mention that. So that's a thing that I put up at RickEmerson.com in response to, I swear to Christ, like overwhelming demand. It's just I could just be giving out bullion. And people would not have responded as strongly as they did. That was the same day that I suggested the I Heart My Carbon Footprint bumper sticker.
So is this going to be a t-shirt as well on our what's up? Because we have talked about putting up some t-shirts.
I just
for
stuck
sale.
The bumper sticker up on RickEmerson.com like on a whim because I had like 15 minutes and you know, nothing wasn't anything in my planner scheduled for this tiny block of time on Saturday night. So I designed it and just stuck it up. You know, and then they were just they were just flying out the door like so many heart decorated frisbees. I mean, like 5 minutes later. So,
we'll have to talk about this fine promotional opportunity after the show.
She'll have to let me know exactly what that guy's reaction to it is. All right.
Also, have an email here from Michael. As you'll recall, we were talking about Oprah yesterday and how you and I hadn't watched Oprah except for when they had the woman on who had her face ripped off by the chimp.
Yes.
Well, mine. Hey, Dawn. That lady that had her face ripped off by the monkey, I believe, after she stuck a rag doll or stuffed animal in his face. The monkey was killed after that, and the lady was in need of a face transplant. What they should have done was put the monkey's face on her. That way, whenever she looked in the mirror, she'd be reminded not to F with monkeys.
I think at this point, that lesson can be considered learned. I mean, I don't really know. We haven't had any sort of clinical trials or anything to establish that, but I would imagine of all of the things she probably is likely to remember, don't F with monkeys is somewhere near the top of the list.
He signs it Michael, and then in tiny, tiny print under his name, he writes, Clown Watch theme.
Ah, yes. I keep meaning to put that up at the archives as sort of a downloadable thing, but that has not yet happened. So,
yeah.
So we get to all of that stuff. Also, I want to thank again Jack Moralia from Grand Central. Grand Central Bakery, who gave us that the skull made out of bread, which you can see if you go to facebook.com/RickEmerson or to our to the Twitter page, to twitter.com/RickEmerson. I put up a picture of the bread skull, which is almost entirely gone at this point, and which was unbelievably good. So thank you for that. It was really quite something. I was sitting there last night just looking at the last little bit of it, and it's that thing where you're thinking, I really shouldn't eat the rest of this. But it's like so little that it's not really going to make a meal in and of itself later on. You know, but it's enough. You don't want to throw it away.
So basically yesterday you ate bread and cookies.
I ate like 15 pounds of bread that were compressed into a thing that really was not that big. Like the surface area... didn't really seem adequate for it to weigh as much as it did, both in your hand and in my stomach.
Yeah, so. I tore off one little bite of that yesterday, and it was very difficult to tear off a piece.
It really was quite
and
good.
It was hefty.
So that is all on the way. We'll get to the news desk here in just a few. What is going on with you today?
I lost my pen. I'm looking for my pen. I needed to find a pen.
Today you seem a little, what's the word, spasmodic. It's like every time I look over, I haven't really said anything about it because I wondered if you were having a palsy of some kind.
My little spazzy.
Are you having some sort of a random firing of synapses happening in your cerebral cortex?
Here's my thing. I'm anxious. I'm very, very anxious. Let me explain to you what happened, why I'm anxious. Okay. A couple of days ago, I'll do this story as quickly as I can. A couple of days ago, day before yesterday, we got one of those people who came to the door. Remember, like, for years, there were always the people who sold you, like, supposedly sold you magazine subscriptions.
Right.
But they didn't actually sell you magazine subscriptions. It turned out that they were, like, you know, street kids that are just dumped in neighborhoods by scam artists and sit around to say, I'm trying to win a contest.
I actually don't remember this. I mean, I've had people come to my door to try to sell me stuff, but
right.
I must have missed the whole part where it was a scam.
Well, yeah, there's these ongoing scams. There's magazine subscriptions. Sometimes they're tied to, like I'm trying to win a scholarship contest so that I can go on a trip that my school is putting on.
Right.
But they're not actually selling you anything. They just want you to give them checks and money and such. And then they all get rounded up by a... They say, like somebody on the text box, somebody says, I used to be addicted to crack. You know, they'll tell you the whole things about... They're in some program that cleaned them up.
But it's really just to get a check from you, to get the cash.
Yeah, it really is. So there's some new one. I don't even know what the end result of it is. But I've had two of these people come to my house now, my apartment, and it always starts with them really super fast talking. They're young. They're always in their early 20s, fairly well groomed looking. But it's like, hey, hi, how you doing? You know, I like your hair. You're a nice looking person. So tell me, I'm taking a survey for this project I'm working on. You know, I'm for the school project. What do you do for a living? And they start trying to get you to answer all these questions. One of these people came like a month or two back, and I was just like, I have an idea where this is going, and no. And I just, you know, shut the door on it. Somebody showed up at the house night before last, a young woman. My husband answered the door, same kind of thing. Hi there, sir. Well, you know, I'm doing this project. I've got to take these surveys and ask people questions. What kind of exciting thing do you do for a... And I was like, shut up. Don't talk to her. Make her go away. Leave. So he shut the door, left. We went out last night, went to a screening. Went to see The Town, the new Ben Affleck. We came home, and I was unlocking the door, and I noticed right at my eye level, on the right side of my door jamb, someone had drawn an X on my door jamb with a ballpoint pen. Now, I live, you know, you've seen where I live. I live in an apartment in a big complex. I live in a downstairs apartment kind of tucked away under the stairs. It's not like I get a lot of foot traffic coming by my house. And so I immediately think the only reason that might be there is that this person who was there, you know, marked my door. Like
with the hobo code.
Exactly. Like the hobo code.
Disagreeable woman lives here.
Exactly. And so it was like a mark to like warn somebody else. Is like, I already hit this apartment. Don't go here. Or I don't know what it is. It could mean.
Was it with a? Now, let me just back up for a second. Where was the X?
It was on the wooden like door jamb, like right around the frame.
The thing that frames
around
the
front door.
All right.
Like right at my eye level.
And was it done with like a marker or a pen?
It was just done with a thin point ballpoint pen.
How big was it? The X?
About an inch high. By
all right.
It was just like somebody had just written an X.
So there was no way it was just like a scratch. I mean, it was somebody had really very clearly drawn this. On
exactly.
The door.
Somebody had just written an X on my door.
Okay.
So now I'm just like, you know, and like somebody in the text was saying, it's most likely a mark that they already talked to me. So somebody else in their group of people running around running
right.
their scam.
Don't go to this house.
Don't go to this house. But at the same time, there's this part of me that thinks, or it means, hey, these people have like their bedroom window open. Come rob them.
There's a mark who lives here.
Yeah. So now I'm all paranoid. So I went out and I scrubbed it off. So we'll find out soon.
How would they know that you have a bedroom window or whatever?
Well, my downstairs, they might not know it's my bedroom, but my window right around the corner from the front door is like right at ground level, and it's usually open for the cat.
FYI.
So, you know, well, not anymore. You know, and it's been hot, so we've had the living room windows open, and we often forget to, like, close them. Because I realize that, you know, nobody is ever, like, safe all the time. But come on, I live in, like, this sort of upscale apartment complex in Tualatin. You know, it's not, it just strikes me as unlikely people are going to be coming and, like, climbing in my living room windows in the middle of the afternoon. So, but still, so I told Patrick, it's like, okay, make sure all the windows are closed and latched, like, every day when we leave now, because I don't know. We've been marked by hobos. We've been marked by gypsies and hobos. We don't know. So then I go to come to work today.
Gypsies and hobos.
I come to work, I get in the car, and I realize that my husband failed to go to take the recycling in. And he left it all in the car. So now I'm already in this heightened state of anxiety. And now I have to, like, park my car out on the street here in Southeast Portland all afternoon with huge bags of, like, aluminum cans and stuff in the back. So now I'm convinced that during the day while we're doing the show, someone's going to break my window and steal my cans for meth. And I'm just anxious and just all a flutter now today because I've been marked by gypsies.
Uh-huh.
And I have all of these recycling in my car.
Is everything okay at home? Is everything fine in medical land? Everything's being ingested in at the right time, in the right amounts?
You know, my husband asks me that sometimes, and it's just, have you been taking the crazy pills, Don?
No contraindications happening. I'm just asking.
You might have a little heightened awareness too if your home was marked by hobos.
I'm just saying this: that were it not for the fact that you were discussing an actual apartment, and maybe I was going to say maybe a car, but it just sounds very much like something you'll hear from one of those homeless people who had to leave his box for the day. Because he had to go out and he had to go, he had some things to do downtown. He had to, you know, he had to go gather, like, balls of twine or something. But meanwhile, he's afraid that somebody is going to, like, push him over and take the cart from him. And the cart, of course, is filled with all his bottles and cans, which he doesn't want to lose. And so he then just carries the big can, his sacks of bottles and cans with him because he doesn't want the sacks of bottles and cans he is taking to the recycling center to be taken away. Meanwhile, he's anxious about whatever is happening to his Maytag container, you know, like on the other side of town. I'm just saying the specifics, the scale may be slightly more macro, but I would say the symptomology and perhaps the reactions are not dissimilar.
I'm just saying if I seem a little skittish, if I seem a little more nervous than usual, it's because my home was marked by hobos, okay. And I have a car full of cans.
All right. Is your house locked, though?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Well, it's locked, so and everything's all latched up. Nothing is going to happen to the apartment.
I've been to your place. It's not like anybody's going to be kicking in a window or something there.
No. But it's like I transferred my anxiety about the hobo marking to the car thing. And I realized that it's like now I'm just, and if it wasn't the car thing, it would be something else. It's like I just got anxious about this and then something else happened. And now it just seems to be traveling through my life where it's like, you know, it's like, and then all of a sudden, I don't have a pen. You know, so there's this kind of heightened anxiety.
The really good news about this, of course, is for me and my needs, because I thought I was just sort of projecting some weird craziness onto you. So it's good to know that that's actually not the case. Often I just sort of have an internal breakdown happening, and I just sort of spray that onto everybody else in a sort of in a redirected kind of fashion. It's good to know that actually on this day, I'm not really making things up in my own head. All right. Well, that's fantastic.
Someone in the text box says, "P.S. Hobos mark Rick's place with poo."
That's true. No, that's how they let me know that the entire block. Really, there's like 5 square miles around my house that I think belong to a series of dogs and homeless guys, because there's just a whole lot of urine that's been sprayed everywhere. All right. Well, would it make you feel better if you looked out the window occasionally just to make sure that nobody's, like, kicking in the window of your car to make off with your cans?
No, I can't really see it. I can only see as far as the giant penis on the ground.
It's like in your head we're in the middle of Oakland or something. That it's just, you know, like we're in downtown Tacoma.
Well, I feel fairly secure here. We're not in, like, a bad neighborhood.
No, I mean, we're in
And it's the middle of the afternoon.
Yeah. We're in a neighborhood that's in the process of being gentrified, like, right now.
I didn't say it was...
They're probably putting in a Pottery Barn across the street, like, as we speak.
Oh, and so... also this morning...
Oh, God.
This morning I watched the end of the rest of the third episode of Sons of Anarchy.
Yeah.
And you never warned me that there was, like, that they cut the balls off of a carny clown.
Oh, I forgot to mention that.
So that kind of, you know, that started my day on a note.
Okay. Well, it's good that you're past it now. It's good that you've moved on and you've achieved a more balanced state of mind here at 147. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. Coming up later on, Lise Wood and Brian Wood from Big Ass Sandwiches will join us. We've got a Geek Watch on the way, Penis Watch on the way, and Pop Culture Authority. Let's pay a visit to the news desk with Don Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
A Clackamas County judge has ordered a faith-healing couple to bring their 6-year-old daughter to the doctor when she is sick, rather than only praying for her recovery. Shannon and Dale Hickman belong to Followers of Christ Church, where the congregation chooses prayer over modern medicine. Last fall, prayers were not enough when the Hickman's baby developed a bacterial infection and eventually died.
Now, this is sort of an ad hoc religious nutcase watch.
Kind of, yeah. These are the people that we actually did a religious nutcase watch on them.
Were they the ones where the kid had the huge softball thing on her eye? Is that the same?
Yeah.
Okay, but now they go to the hospital for the same girl?
Well, no, that baby died.
The girl with the thing on her eye died?
Well, that might not have been it was one of these people. They're from the same church. They had a baby that had a bacterial infection last fall. The baby died.
Is this the same family, though, that had the girl that was in the Oregonian where they ran the huge soft, you know, where they had the huge tumor or whatever it was in the front of her face?
I was thinking it was, but it might not be.
I mean, I assume that they're all sort of together in, like, you know, like one tiny plot of land, probably sharing a big bed with their feet sticking out of the end of it. But
yeah,
I mean, you know,
they're
what do
all
I
members
know?
Of the same crackpot church.
They really are like a more zealous bucket family, just kind of jammed into one little hovel together, I think.
Well, they were arrested after their baby's death and charged with manslaughter. Their trial has been scheduled to begin in November. Meantime, the judge has agreed to reduce their bail under the condition that they bring their other child, a 6-year-old girl named Daisy, to the doctor when she's sick. In addition, the Department of Human Services will make surprise visits to their home. Daisy would likely be at risk if something goes wrong medically and she is not sent to the hospital, said prosecuting attorney Michael Regan. The Hickman's attorney promised that Daisy has already been examined by a doctor and given tests, and at this time appears to be healthy.
This is why, by the way, I instinctively disbelieve people who complain about how the Department of Child Welfare and Social Services is really zealous. They'll take away your kid for spanking him now. This is a thing, by the way, that you always hear about. You hear this from people who are fighting some sort of a custody battle. And they will always claim that, you know, well, the social department will just come and take your kid away for nothing. Really? If you are correct in your assessment of who this family is, it may be like they already have the one kid who's dead. Maybe not. They may also be the family whose kid had, like, the huge melon-sized cyst on the front of her face. But they're almost, but they are almost certainly in that same, sort of orbit. I mean, even if it's not the same church, I think it is a branch of the same church.
No, I believe it is actually the same church.
If we've got this right. But now, so this whole group of people, are they in turn affiliated in some way with the folks that were on trial? Because there was that couple that was on trial last year, right? And they got acquitted?
Yeah, that was actually a different couple. That was Carl and Raylene Worthington,
right,
who also belonged to the same church.
But it's the same church.
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay.
These people, in effect, killed their child. And yet, it's sort of like, well, we'll reduce your bail as long as you promise you'll take the other kid to the doctor.
I mean, you know, the only good news here
is
that
I believe that they will. I trust them if they just give their word.
The only demonstrable upside is that it tends to be a bit of a self-cleaning oven with people like this, because none of their kids seem to live long enough to reproduce. So just like lax attention to helmet laws eventually got rid of the Allman Brothers, so will not going to a doctor get rid of these people eventually. And we will all be better for it, by the way. So that's the official opinion of the Emerson News Network. Here's Don Taylor.
An increasing number of students can't pay their student loans, according to the U.S. Department of Education. Deputy Secretary James Kval says the default rate increased to 7% in fiscal year 2008. He says the economy is partly to blame.
What is the name of this cut?
College.
Let's see if I've got it.
We're working very hard to help students understand their repayment obligations, to give them a new flexible repayment terms, and try and make sure that that the amount of debt that they're taking out is appropriate for the program that they're in.
By the way, this is the voice that leaves a really, really unhelpful phone tree message at some business that you desperately need to get a hold of because it's the middle of December and your heater doesn't work.
Kaval also says some students are also attending for-profit schools where the cost of class is more expensive.
The United States, when compared to most of the countries, for instance, in Western Europe,
I think
and
this
Canada,
might be wrong.
Lags significantly behind.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Is that William Borecki's son?
I don't know, but that's another one of those sound bites that's awesome because it can be used for anything.
The United States, when compared to most of the countries, for instance, in Western Europe and Canada, lags significantly behind.
I'm not entirely sure that's even about the same story, but I'm not sure that it isn't.
But you should hold on to that because, again, that will apply to almost everything.
I'm
going to
file
always.
That away. That's awesome.
I think the biggest thing, of course, is the fact that we find so many candidates. We have over 700. We believe about half of those will probably turn out to be planets.
By the way, so I'm reading this book by Bill Bryson, The Short History of Nearly Everything, and he's discussing the development of cosmology and astronomy and the understanding of the intergalactic world. And there are large sections of the book that no matter what he's talking about or what the subject of discussion is, whenever I'm going through a particular passage, I just hear that.
I think the biggest thing, of course, is the fact that we find so many candidates.
That's the voice with which it sort of reads itself in my head. It's like having a reflexive audiobook that just sort of.
We need to look through these candidates with ground-based telescopes and find out which are really planets and which aren't.
Like, I just went through this whole section where he was talking about the discovery of a moon around Pluto that they didn't know was there.
Did you say that this book that you're reading was about the intricacies of the intergalactic world?
Yeah, well, that's just my not terribly bright way of putting it.
Okay.
Not that the intergalactic world isn't you know the creation as it is understood. Not that it's an easy thing.
Okay. Thank you. Now that are you familiar with the phenomenon of pedo bear?
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, for those who are not, Pedo Bear is a internet meme featuring a cute cartoon bear who pops up whenever people are being creepy about kids on the internet.
And it's like an ASCII art thing.
Yeah.
We should clarify, by the way, when we say, hey, who is a fan of Pedo Bear? Because I think, as we'll find in the story, that almost certainly can be misconstrued by any number of people. And by any number of people, I mean the government. And so Pedo Bear, as I have seen him, he pops up on this website, dig.com. And I mean, it's in lots of other places, I'm sure. But it's on, like, every message thread on Dig, which is a sort of FARC-like site. Somebody will inevitably, it doesn't matter what it's about, it could be a study of like, petunias. And somebody will put in a piece of ASCII art that is either Admiral Akbar saying something like, it's a tarp, or it'll be a Pedo Bear who is an ASCII art teddy bear who seems as though he is striding very purposely toward you, and then presumably to defile someone's child.
Well, Pedo Bear, in his non-ASCII form, is actually a very adorable sort of anime Japanese-looking looking bear. It started on the message board 4chan as kind of an inside joke that whenever someone posted something that seemed like it was kind of creepy about a kid, someone else would, you know, like an adolescent girl in a sexy pose or something, somebody else would post Pedo Bear to point out that they were being, you know, kind of creepy about kids. Well, the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Department, who can't really be bothered to, like, look up their Wikipedia entry or something and find out what Pedo Bear actually is, issued a serious warning about Pedo Bear last week. He said they warned parents about a disturbing new phenomenon made popular by pedophiles and sexual deviants. Pedo Bear, of course, began as an online Japanese cartoon character who's known for his lecherous nature. And really, it's not something that is spread by pedophiles. It's something that's spread by guys who spend too much time on the internet.
It's like saying that it would be like saying that the lolcat is some sort of a... Because what they're basically trying to say is, to bring it back around to your apartment, Don, they're basically trying to say that the pedo bear is a sort of gypsy X on the door of the pedophile world, which is not. You might as well say the O'Reilly owl is that thing. But it's just more weird crap that nerds do on the internet.
And one of the things that the San Luis Obispo police pointed out as like one of the scary dangers of pedo bears, they showed a picture of somebody in a pedo bear costume standing next to a man who was holding a baby, showing you that the pedo bear is like, you know, there's a guy with an innocent child real close to the pedophile bear. Of course, this picture was taken at Comic-Con.
Of course.
Anyway, the folks at Gawker, and you can read more about this whole San Luis Obispo Police Department thing over on Gawker, they actually called the San Luis Obispo Sheriff's Department, and it turned out that someone there actually did figure out eventually that it is something of an internet joke. But they didn't stop them from also responding by sending the folks at Gawker their two-page public safety information bulletin titled, A Seemingly Innocent Menace, An Introduction to Pedo Bear.
Wow.
And I highly recommend that you go to Gawker and seek this out because it's hilarious.
By the way, I don't know if you saw any of the 4chan stuff. I forget exactly why this happened. There was some sort of hacking or cracking trial that happened real recently. But the guy who was sort of the overlord of 4chan, the guy who kind of runs the whole domain, he was in a courtroom and they were giving him, he was having to give a deposition about 4chan and some of their activities. And I don't think it had anything to do with the Scientology protests that were happening a year or so ago, the anonymous stuff. It was just like they'd been accused of like rooting around in somebody's private info and whatever. So they have this guy on the stand. And I understand that a certain amount of this must be done just because you got to have it on the record. But there is the most hilarious exchange. You can read the transcript of it, but it's far better if you actually watch the guy questioning this guy, this dude from 4chan, where he's just going through a list of internet acronyms and memes and then asking the guy on the stand to explain what they mean. And so he's doing the whole, you know, the rolling on the floor, the ruddle, you know, where yeah. It's the laughing my ass off or whatever it is. It's that. And he's having to explain, like, what a noob is. He's having to explain, you know, like, it says here that occasionally folks on your 4chan web portal will refer to someone as a tard bait. What is would you please to enlighten the court as to what tard bait is? And then you see this guy who's in a courtroom, so it's not like he can be screwing around. It's not like he can be just responding with a post of the Hypnotoad or something. He has to actually say, well, tard bait is something that we find to be an overly obvious or cliched observation and of such a pedestrian nature that it really attracts the lowest common denominator in terms of an online reply or posting. So that's the definition of tard bait, is it? Yes, that is tard bait. And it just goes on and on for like, you know what it reminds me of? I think I actually have this right here. And then we'll take a break here in a moment. We'll do Pop Culture Authority. We'll come back with Brian Wood and Lisa Wood of Big Ass Sandwiches, who I believe are lurking in the kitchen. Let's see if I've got this. This is a, somebody sent this to me and they wanted us to talk about it. We don't have time to do the whole thing here. But they sent us, here we go, how to understand your kids' text messages. And it was a tool for parents. And it's this entire page all about how you can decipher the strange language in which your kids are speaking on the internet. And the best thing about it, of course, is that you know like 80% of this is just fabricated. I mean, it's just like crap that no one ever says. Let's see if I've got an example here of something that is just patently unbelievable. Okay, Don, what is the internet acronym? Because they do some of the internet acronyms. Some of them easy to guess, some of them not so much. We'll start with some of the easy ones.
And, of course, keeping in mind I'm 73 years old, I don't know.
Don, BTW.
By the way.
Yes. FYI.
For your information.
Okay. How about this one? I-M-N-E-C-T-H-O.
I-M-N-E-C-T-H-O. T-H-O. Not a clue.
Yeah. That is in my not... I've scrolled down. Is it... that is in my not even close to humble opinion.
Okay.
How about this one, Don? A-W-G-T-H-T-G-T-T-A.
I don't know.
No one knows.
Think anyone uses these because they're too long. Because what's the point of an acronym if it's like 14 letters long?
That's the thing, because you might as well just type the goddamn sentence. It's the reason that no one abbreviates New York NY. You know why? Two syllables. Same goddamn thing. Even saying it sounds, it makes me sound like tard bait. A-W-G-T-H-T-G-T-T-A, Don, is, are we going to have to go through this again? Let's see, one more here. Now keep in mind, this is a thing that's being distributed by, among other people, Microsoft, okay. As a guide to parents for how to interpret your kids' Intertron lingo.
All right.
F-M-L-T-W-I-A.
T-W-I-A.
The answer is F-M-L-T-W-I-A.
Well, the F-M-L is F my life. That was something. I don't know.
F me like the whore I am.
Oh, God.
So there you go.
No.
That's, there you go. They claim, they conclude here by saying, text messages are one of the main ways children communicate with each other, and it can be a great way for you to communicate with them. Making the mistake of not taking the time and effort to learn this lingo can have drastic consequences, Dawn. They know how to use text lingo to talk to your kids. This is the untoward element with which your children might be consorting. Shouldn't you do the same?
Well, every generation of kids ends up tethered to a generation of parents who are given ridiculous information about things that their kids are ostensibly involved in.
Yeah.
That is untrue.
So there you go. I'll post this. I'll post this later on today. It's just fantastic. All right.
Well, AFAIK, Rick. No, that's silly.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964. In just a moment, we are going to have today's installment of Pop Culture Authority, and then Lisa Wood and Brian Wood will join us on the other side. We'll talk about Big Ass Sandwiches as they approach their 1 year anniversary of being in business. Top five coming up later on as well. The top five worst songs recorded by a celebrity. We have a Geek Watch Penis Watch on the way, and don't forget, this hour the Rick Emerson Show is brought to you by, among other folks, Mr. Michael Beatty. He is the owner and proprietor of The Cleaning Solution. 971-533-3211 is how you can contact him. 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. That is his contact information. We will have a little bit more information about him on later in the hour. Plus, Dawn Taylor will return with the news and so forth. What do the other letters in CBGB stand for, though?
From the Emerson News Network, this is Pop Culture Authority.
We want to thank listener Rick for sending us this query. It says, Dear Pop Culture Authority, I'm a huge Ramones fan. I happen to think that given the chance that they were so often denied, the Ramones could have risen to near Beatle-like fame and fortune. We've all seen those iconic pictures of the band in front of CBGB's in New York. While everyone seems to know what the letters C, B, G, and B stand for, my pop culture question is this. What the F do the other letters M, O, F, U, G stand for? Signed, Rick. Well, Rick, one of the world's truly iconic performance venues, the legendary CBGB's, was, for a time, the center of the musical world. Founded in 1973 by Hilly Kristal, the club deviated from its intended mission almost from the beginning. Kristal had, you see, planned for the club to focus on country, bluegrass, and blues, the C, B, G, and B of its primary name. Within just a short while, however, the venue had become the de facto nucleus of a burgeoning punk and new wave scene. Bands who made their names at CBGB's include the Ramones, Television, the Patti Smith Group, the Dead Boys, the Dictators, the Cramps, and Blondie. The club's instantly recognizable logo can still be seen on disaffected youths and has become synonymous with a certain kind of manic, insular, grassroots musical explosion. As for the rest of the name, though, CBGB's and OMFUG, it actually stands for Country, Bluegrass, Blues, and Other Music for Uplifting Gormandizers. Gormandizers being a take on gourmand, or discriminating connoisseur of various foodstuffs. CBGB's closed in 2006, a victim of changing times and an ongoing property dispute. It is certainly not forgotten, however, especially by anyone who visits the venue's former location, a spot flanked by a street now named Joey Ramone Place.
The final word on the only knowledge that matters. Pop Culture Authority from the Emerson News Network.
Hearing echoes. Russian roulette with my pearl-handled gun. The county won't give me any more methadone, and they cut off your welfare check. Carolina, hold me tighter. I think I'm sinking down, and I'm all strung out on heroin on the outskirts of town. Carolina, hold me tighter. I think I'm sinking down, and I'm all strung out.
It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. And this message here in the text box says, you have set a land speed record for most uses of the phrase pedo bear. Well done. Well, that's what we do, sir. It's all part of the service you receive here at Rick Emerson's House of Fun. If you'd like to email us, you can do it. It's rick@rickemerson.com. You can also email Dawn. That is Dawn at rickemerson.com, and the text box at the website is up and running as well. In just a moment, we'll be joined by Lisa Wood and Brian Wood of Big Ass Sandwiches. Don Taylor is tracking the following headlines for you on this Tuesday.
A doctor carves a name into a woman's uterus. A man nearly loses his arm helping an alligator. And I think after those two, really, where do we go?
Really, I think the metric weight of puzzlement and... I don't even really know how to... Okay. Maybe I don't understand what the uterus looks like. Does it specify with what he was carving? I mean, you don't have to tell me now, but is that a thing that's going to pay off at some point?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, all will be revealed, Rick Emerson.
All right, because sometimes we just leave these stories no more enlightened than when we entered them. We come out of the other side, and it's just a whole different brand of obfuscation.
It's all part of this wacky carnival we call the Rick Emerson Show.
All right, so there you go. So we will have that coming up, as well as Geek Watch, Penis Watch, and the Top 5 coming up later in this hour. Top 5 Worst Songs Performed by an Actor. Top 5 Worst Songs Performed by an Actor. Without further ado, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Program the owners, proprietors, and overlords of Big Ass Sandwiches.
I really like Overlord. That's awesome.
You guys are sort of Lisa Wood and Brian Wood, who most of you guys know if you've listened to Fun Employment Radio, if you listened to the last couple of versions of the Rick Emerson Show. Lisa, you were a presence on there, and you and I worked together at KUFO.
Yep.
Until... I hate that I have to ask this of every person who seems to guest on the show.
June 2009.
It's like the last 9 people have been on the show. I'm like, when did they fire you?
I'm sorry, June 18th, 2009.
That's right.
Big Jim Willig was here a while back, and I love Jim too, and I realized that I think he was the second person in a row who'd guested that had somehow gotten blown out. Maybe Sarah and Greg had been on or something the week before that. But everybody kind of has their own, you know, their own take on
and
the tale.
And they, like, bludgeoned him into a puddle of sad before they let him go. It was bad.
He said the phrase they used was, you know, we're gonna be making a change in the headcount here.
In the headcount.
Wow. But then they went right from headcount to here at the KUFO family. And then they kind of made him guess at it. Like, they didn't actually say, like, and so you're fired, which at least has a certain brevity, right? There's kind of a clarity of purpose there where they've gone to the bottom of the page.
He sat there through the whole meeting just going, okay, yeah, all right, okay.
I'm going to get back to work now.
Yeah, I'm going to go do... Yeah. Yeah, I'll just go do the news. Oh! Oh,
I'm fired.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, they really treated him poorly.
I mean, and I had no idea that it was that awkward. So, but not to dwell on it, but
you were
there until mid 2000. It's all such
June
a blur.
June 2009.
2009. And so you've been the promotions director at KUFO, when you would sort of separated from that organization, you kind of looked around and just did you not want to go back into radio, or did you really strongly want to go into something else?
On-air stuff I did at KUFO, like the local show and the punk show with Sarah, and the things that I like about radio. I worked at KEXP in Seattle for 5 years, where you go into a room of 50,000 records and actually pick every note that you play. That was the kind of radio I wanted to do. It doesn't really exist in many forms. So I would want to do that kind of radio again. And, you know, even trying to talk about maybe keeping the punk show or maybe keeping the... I think they kept Viva La Luna, which, you know, I don't know how it's going, but at least it's there. You know, at least local bands are getting some attention. But on the scope of corporate radio, no, not really.
And so and it was not too long after that that you guys started putting together the idea for Big Ass Sandwiches. What was the timeline? When did you first have your meeting? Because, Brian, you've worked in restaurants for a long time. When did you guys first have the idea? When was the first day that you said, you know what we could do is one of them food cart things?
I think when I got laid off, it was like, oh, like now what? You know, it was right. My second layoff in 2 years in that industry.
Did you just have that thing of like, I don't want to pack all my crap into a car and drive to Ohio?
I know.
Start selling crack.
And that's never, yeah. I guess I've never cared enough about a commercial radio job to move from a place that I love. KEXP was hard to leave, but I didn't want to live in Seattle anymore. So I drove up there every once in a while, but it just wasn't something that was going to happen on a monetary scale to support us. So we had always talked about opening a restaurant anyway, and I was like, what's next? Maybe we can open a restaurant. And that was kind of how it started.
And I mentioned earlier that you guys were out in Beaverton this morning. Glorious Beaverton. taping an episode of Outlook Portland, which is going to air, I think, on
September 26th.
September 26th. So not this Sunday, but... this is an indication, by the way, of why Cheryl is crucial that you remember the date and I didn't. It's just all like a wash in my head. But we talked about a lot of this stuff this morning, that it was right at the... Not like the economy's really like going gangbusters.
It wasn't the time.
But it was like when you would turn it on CNN every night, and it's like Ali Velshi, she's like, I don't have a chart that goes low enough. You know, and the line is like already at the floor, and he's just like, I've run out of adjective. We're all doomed. And you guys were like, let's start a business. And
well, because I used to be able to send out 5 resumes and get 2 or 3 interviews. Bam, no problem. Because I had, even before radio, I have a lot of just work experience and office. I have a lot of experience. And nothing, like a couple rejections, but it was that maddening thing of like, do I wait and hope that somebody else is going to take care of us, or do we just maybe take care of ourselves if we can?
Well, in the restaurant industry, I forget whether you were actually working at a restaurant at the time, Brian, or whether you had started to do other stuff because it was just, because that's a, and Donna told me about this, that's an industry that'll just drive you mental.
Oh, yeah,
thankless.
I gave up on it. When we first moved down here, I got my last official chef position for somebody else at a restaurant that's over on Hawthorne, and it was terrible. It was, the lady that owned the place is just an idiot, and it was kind of par for the course for every other restaurant that I'd ever worked at. If it wasn't one problem of alcoholism or cocaine addiction, it was another problem of
not knowing how to
arrogance and nepotism and just absurd silly problems. And I gave up. I went to work for retail place downtown in the maintenance department, and it was rad, except I still was working for somebody else, and getting up at 4:30 in the morning sucks.
And so you decided to go into the low stress business of running your own food cart, which of course, as we know, is like a 3-4 hour day at max.
I was going to say, now we get up at 6:45 a.m.
I would imagine it's just hours of laying around in the evening going, well, our day is done. Maybe we should just slack for the next day or two.
It was really interesting because from my point of view, because one of these great things about this insane world we live in now with social media and all is that those of us who know you were following this entire saga from the beginning on Facebook and Twitter.
I found that people really enjoy that, so I was like, yeah, give the people what they want.
So it was like, you know, from you starting out going, oh, you know, we love like Irish pubs. We'd love to own a pub. Maybe we could open a pub. Let's do that. Hey, we're talking to somebody about renting. Like, holy crap, this is going to cost so much money it would kill us. No, well, maybe we can get a loan. Okay, we can't get a loan. And then going through the thing of like, maybe we'll do a cart. What would we serve on the cart? And then like inviting people over and having them taste test the sandwiches. And it's been actually kind of awesome to be able to watch you like grow the business from the very beginning. Just
you're like
from
a,
the outside.
You're like our own reality show. seriously, that we can just sort of. You're like a much more interesting version of like pick a show where they you know give a guy you know the mission to go start a business or something because a because
that's flattering.
You,
well, I appreciate that.
I mean because you know for those of us who know you, but especially but also because you guys are. I mean, you are really doing what a lot of people have either thought about doing or something that a lot of people are feeling like. Well, if I'm you know this is the time. If it's ever going to be, yeah. if there's ever going to be a bar that maybe is low enough that I can try to get into this, yeah. you know, business, now's the time. Did you?
It's terrifying, though. I mean, it was nauseatingly terrifying to take that kind of a leap. But
I mean, did you? When you told people like about it, did they warn you away? Did you get a whole lot of like, I don't know.
Not really.
Actually, nobody
people
told
were really
us that.
A lot of people had seen me go through all of the struggles that I went through with trying to keep the job in the industry I was in. And you know, it was a lot of love and support. And, like, even if maybe they thought, oh, my God, they're crazy, nobody said it. But it was a lot of just like, yeah, we're pulling for you. Go.
I think it was last, maybe last December that you guys were on Outlook Portland. It was not, you had not opened yet, but you were kind of getting ready to.
Close,
and we did this whole show about local businesses. And we had some businesses that were already up and running. And we had Alex Arica from Viso. And that's become, you know, it's not everywhere yet, but it's become a very entrenched product. And I was talking to those guys, and just you know, and Alex had very much the same story, where he was just like some guy at home in his kitchen with like beakers and flasks and vials and jars, and he was like his friends were all over, and they would just like mix all of this crap like late into the night, trying to come up with some flavor that worked.
Sounds like you're describing a meth lab.
I know.
I didn't say that. You said that. That's right. Dawn actually saw me yesterday. This is a thing I've done several times, where I will forget to bring a Viso up with me, and actually, during a break, I will sprint to the car and then sprint back up here like, did I miss anything? And it's just because I had to go to the car to actually get the Viso.
So good.
But he talked about, you know, from those early stages, and then when you actually launch it, it just suddenly, like, consumes you. I mean, it's just like 16-hour days. I mean, it's weeks on end.
Yeah, and I'm a pretty social person, and I would probably went to 2-3 shows a week and just was out and about a lot, and now people are like, we never see you. They understand, but it's this weird thing of like your entire life is consumed by this little metal box.
What was it like the first day? I'm sorry, I stepped on over there for a second. That's what was it like the first day you opened? The first day you were in business?
It was awesome.
It was terrifying.
I mean, is it all? Sometimes you do that kind of stuff and you look back and you don't even remember it. It's like you remember getting up and you remember going to bed, but you don't remember the actual day.
The middle of it's a little blurry, just because it was the adrenaline of it and just like. We went from one kind of fear and stress to this whole new different fear and stress of, well, okay, now it's open, you know. But it was Tim Riley came down and shot some footage of it. So we were in the cart. We got everything ready. His band had a show like two nights before, and then we literally spent like 24 hours in there just cleaning, and he was putting shelves up. So the morning we turned on We Are the Champions, which is totally cheesy, I know, but. And it was all still closed up, and we like, oh my God, I can't believe we're doing this. And then we like kind of gave each other a little hug, and right when it was like, we are the champions.
Wait, so I have to understand this. So this and that's cheesy elsewhere. It's not cheesy here. This is a bubble in which there is no cheese.
We had come really far. We were just like, wow.
So you're there. This is you guys actually in the cart itself.
Just the two of us.
Which, by the way, is at 3rd and Ash. Yeah. If you want to find it, Big Ass Sandwiches you can go there right now at this very moment.
You can.
I don't even care where you get the money. You can steal it from somebody else. It doesn't matter. You can go there.
It's not us.
3rd and Ash.
Right.
So you're there in the food cart. This is what time of day?
Oh, God. It was probably 8 in the morning.
Yeah, it was early.
It was 8 in the morning.
We opened early to start. We opened at like 8:30 in the morning.
And you've got your radio or your whatever in there, and you've got your queen on, and We Are the Champions. Did you let it play to the entire song and like the crescendo,
no.
like open up the big gate, or did you?
Yeah, like at the middle, like it was one of the middle parts where it's just building
It was
up
the
to
first
the, like,
We Are the Champions.
Yeah.
I pay my dues.
So it builds
the
up.
The best story ever.
We are the champions. And we just like threw the window open. And there was Aaron Duran.
Awesome.
And our friend another guy that we met through Twitter that's named Gerald, and they were just standing there, just the two of them,
I'm just
totally
picturing
ready.
Aaron like in his flash shirt, you know, like tapping
probably.
Something into his like trio, going, yeah. I'd like to get some fries. Hold on a second. I have to.
We were like jumping up and down, and he was like, can you do that again so I can videotape it? And we were like, no.
No, the moment's gone. I'm sorry. I do think, however, that somebody, and I, by somebody I mean me, should be optioning the rights to make this into like a film or something, because it really is just for that moment right there. Just for the. Because I don't think I've seen the Big Ass Sandwiches cart when it sort of closed for business. I think every time I've been there, it's open. But I imagine that it was just like one of those steel shutters they have at like a Sam Goody in the mall.
Well, when you stood under it, did you see that little flap that was over your head?
Maybe. Oh,
okay, it's literally a giant metal flap, and when it closes, it's flush.
So I'm picturing you guys on actually the opening morning of Big Ass Sandwiches, where you sort of, you know, as Freddie Mercury, you know, is just reaching at the apex of his performance. And it's like you're grabbing the metal door and you're throwing it open, and then you're backlit by this dazzling bright light, yeah. And you're just silhouetted there, but like holding a fistful of bacon.
And it hadn't been cooked in yet, so it was all shiny, yeah. And new, and there was bread and food, and it was awesome.
And you serve Dawn's cookies as well.
I know. That's right. And I have to thank you for that. Really, people love them.
I'm glad.
And by people, she means me.
Well, we all okay, do. No, I mean, there's people who are like, too. What kind of cookies do you guys have today? And if we're out, you know, and I'm like, well, next week. But I appreciate that you do that.
Well, there are people that listen that are not from here, or they are from here and they have not actually had the Big Ass Sandwiches experience. I want to say one of the things, too, is that often I think we've all had this experience. You have friends who start new businesses or do little ventures of some sort, and you go, well, that's great. And then you see the thing they've done and you go, yeah, that's
mediocre.
That's nice. That's great.
Yeah.
So it is really terrific when someone does something like this, because I remember my first Big Ass Sandwich of getting it, and I was going to take it home, and I couldn't wait because I was starving. So I opened it up in the car, and my husband's driving, and I take a bite of the sandwich, and I'm just going, this is awesome! Oh my God, with a mouthful of sandwich. So perhaps you could share with people what the Big Ass Sandwich experience actually is, in case they haven't had it yet.
Oh, it's a big ass sandwich. It's covered up in french fries and cheese sauce.
See, he doesn't give himself enough credit. He butchers top rounds and roasts his own, very, very slowly roasts his own beef, which comes out like meat candy.
I don't actually
see. Now you're doing that.
Well, he breaks down his own top rounds.
Why don't I learn at this point just to bring food and leave it in a box next to the microphone? So when somebody.
Are you getting hungry?
Yeah, so when somebody starts talking.
Well, we were holding out that vain hope that maybe they might just arrive,
you know,
with arms full of sandwiches.
I've got, and this is not.
Tell us that. We're not that.
Not that this isn't good news, but I came in today and what greeted me was a case of Bugles from General Mills. Now, I don't want to. Now, that's nothing to sneeze at, because
I love Bugles.
These are like no Bugles that most people have. These aren't like your Earth Bugles,
no,
Brian.
No, they're not.
These are chocolate peanut butter Bugles.
I've never seen these.
Cheryl Kanakoa obtained those from General Mills because I had them, and then. Like any really good food or two girls, one cup, you want to share it with somebody immediately.
Oh, yeah.
I was
absolutely.
Like, Dawn, have these.
Yeah.
And then the next thing, and then we were just kind of going through them. I mean, I was like Jared Leto in Requiem for a Dream. I was just sort of like trying to, you know, stuff as many
more
in as
Bugles.
I could. Don't we have some of those Bugles? No, they're all gone, baby. I don't know where they are. I got to go to the car.
Well, maybe we can stop by tomorrow with a couple of sandwiches.
No. I would not.
But. You have locally sourced meat now.
Yes, the beef comes from St. Helens, and it also is distributed by a family-run business that's been in Portland since like the early 1900s, Columbia Empire Meat. But we also he roasts the turkey. Also, it's not like salty processed deli meat. We cut the fries fresh every day. He makes the cheese sauce, the bechamel, which is kind of like a cheddar fondue,
mm-hmm.
every day. I mean, 80% of our menus. Homemade. He does the coleslaw from scratch. It's just
you make
it's
this
good,
amazing au jus for your
comes from the beef.
That's one of my favorite things to make
it's
too.
So he just takes all the bits that he can't use and roasts it down for like 5 days, and it's so good. And the Caesar dressing he makes it's just all really good food. And I don't feel like he gives himself enough credit because he's very modest, but I can brag because he's an amazing.
And as a customer, I will say, and I'm fairly picky. No, it's a damn fine sandwich.
And it's huge. I mean, I know you call it big ass sandwiches, yeah. But I mean, that's not just sort of a figure. It's not figuratively huge.
But wouldn't
it
you
is
be so literally. Disappointed if you came to that place and we were like, here's your tiny sandwich.
Here's the thing about it. I am an American, and so I have a long history of a particular kind kind of dissatisfaction. And that dissatisfaction is the it doesn't look like the picture syndrome.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody who has gone to a chain restaurant, a fast food restaurant of any kind in this fading republic of ours, with the possible exception of In-N-Out Burger, has had the experience where you look at the thing in the menu, and then you order the thing. And you get it. And I mean, it's just, you know, it's like. It's like seeing the online dating photo and then seeing the in a good light photo.
Totally.
You know, and it's, you know. And
the MySpace angle headshot.
Yeah. The man or woman who looked attractive, suddenly it's just like, you know, it's like you're there with an upright warthog and you just think to yourself, like, why did I fall for this? But so you actually have on your shirt, you're wearing one right now, Brian has the Big Ass Sandwiches shirt. Yeah. And it's, I mean, it, you know, it looks fantastic and it looks massive. It is just so does not do justice to the reality. And I will just say this one final thing. So my wife would take me there because I had not yet gone. So Laura took me to the two Big-Ass Sandwiches. We're sitting up front. And she got it and she handed it to me. And first of all, it's like heavy. I mean, it's like you're holding – I mean, it's just like you're holding a cannonball. The thing
like
is just
– It's like the size of your forearm and weighs about as much as a small baby.
And yes. I don't really know because I'm a fairly slender man. So I'm not really sure where it went. But I will tell you that within like 3 minutes, like I had consumed the entire thing.
See,
and
but
was,
I knew you would love it. I was like, this is food Rick Emerson will – totally put away.
And it's that whole thing where it's like you actually think to yourself, like, I may regret this later, the rapidity with which I'm consuming this. Like, I should save half for later, but no.
Or you think to yourself, I can't possibly eat this entire sandwich. And then it's gone, yeah. And you kind of go, oh my God, no. What did I do?
See, I didn't have that. Here's what I had. I had the I can't possibly order another one with Laura right here. I'll never get the other.
We
oh,
have
God.
People, and it's mostly like the like 19-year-old guys who A, don't care and have the fastest metabolisms in the world. And there's a few who will get a gut bomb, which is like double everything, and then come back and get another one like because maybe they're still in the 20-minute window. But it's pretty, you know, it's so big that a lot of people just eat half and then save half for dinner, and it's like $8 for two meals.
I want to actually ask something, and we did talk about this a bit this morning, just because not that you guys aren't enjoying it, because you clearly are, and it's resonated with Portland, and it's a great, you know, and it's you guys have got you've got a really really great approach and a great tone and a vibe to everything you're doing. But people hear that, and I think they probably, I mean, I certainly don't appreciate it because I haven't had to do it, but they don't get how much work it is. How, like, what kind of days, what kind of hours do you put in working at a food cart? Because people look at that and they think, well, you're not having to run a restaurant, you know, all the overhead. I mean, that's a pretty easy thing
it's
to do, probably.
Because we don't have a restaurant. We don't have storage and all of the things, you know. There's a lot of things restaurants have that we don't. And so it's a very everyday thing. We get up at 6:45. We get to the cart at, like, 8:30. We don't open till 11, but that's all prep, and we divide and conquer. He stays in the cart and does a massive amount of prep while I go out and run and get supplies, and then we open, and then hopefully we stay open till 4, sometimes not. But then, you know, it's dishes and prep and making lists for the next day, and then, you know, you've got to haul our garbage to another lot because our lot doesn't have a dumpster, and it's just one thing after another, and then when we get home, it's QuickBooks and receipts and
because it's not like you're going to be able to hire somebody to do it for you.
Exactly.
Some days it's like 10 or 12. Some days it's 14 or 16.
How many, Dawn asked earlier before you guys got here, said if you had been calculating the total number of sandwiches that you had sold.
Up until now.
Like if you keep track of that, which you probably.
Well, I don't know about sandwiches specifically, but I think as of last month, we figured out that we have gone through about a ton and a half of beef.
You ought to, okay. This
so we were actually
a sign. You should totally have a sign that's like the, you know, the McDonald's with the 5 billion served.
Yeah.
You should have the how many tons of meat you have served.
Do you have somebody have a calculator handy?
I don't know. Let's see if I have a space age device in my pocket of almost superhuman ability that might be able to.
He has to pull out his brand new iPhone.
Hold on a second. Let me just. But you, while I'm, you guys said that you served. What was the most you served in one day? That you had to crank out.
Over 100 on the Cooking Channel day, but it was. Although it was about that much, the concentration of it was 88 sandwiches in 90 minutes, and one sandwich takes like 5 to 7 minutes.
I mean, it is just, you guys must get home at the end of the day and not even want to see food.
I actually started crying at the end of that day.
Brian came home and said, I hope I can say this, that he felt like he had a steady all-day fisting.
Speaking of a steady all-day fisting, in just a moment.
By the way.
I don't know if I can say this, but I, so. What about your kidney stone issue
right?
That just happened? We got a message yesterday during the show, actually. It was a sort of series of messages from Cheryl. She was giving us like this Wall Street ticker. Like, this just in, Brian from Big Ass Sandwiches may not be able to make the show, might have a kidney stone later on. Definitely a kidney stone. And then, like, in excruciating pain, cannot even move, will not be able to make the show.
All social networking, because I didn't talk to Cheryl even once.
Yeah, that's crazy.
By the end of the show, that was like, no, we'll play through pain. We'll be here on Tuesday. So here you are.
Yo, yeah.
It's not to make it, I was going to say to make everybody uncomfortable, but we had this horrible show about a penis fracture a while back, so it's okay.
Oh, penis fracture?
What is up with the kidney stone? Tell me what happened.
It's the second one that I've had that I've been blessed with.
No, but tell him how it all went down.
Oh, so I woke up at about 3 o'clock in the morning, and my right side was feeling a little uncomfortable. And so I got up and went to the bathroom, wandered around the house for a little while. It's kind of my typical nighttime routine, and then about 4 o'clock it started getting worse. By 4:30 it was
now
excruciating.
I back up for a minute. This is the sort of thing on which, oddly enough, I can dwell forever, even though it's a thing that I don't ever want to experience.
Oh.
So you're getting up, part of your normal routine. When you said it was getting worse, this is the pain.
Oh yeah.
What? I know this sounds like a dumb question. Where is the pain exactly?
It's literally on my right side.
It starts in your kidney.
Yeah. It sounds dumb when you say it's a kidney stone, but I didn't know if it was. Yeah. So if it travels, so is it like where the a rabbit punch area, like
sort of
back here by your spine?
It starts there and it starts being a little bit sore and uncomfortable, and it'll actually move down to the front, and then it'll start going down your ureter, which is where the pain is the most concentrated.
She said it's like shoving a rock through a coffee stirrer.
Yeah.
What kind of pain are we talking about here? Is this a sharp pain? Is it a throb?
I'm relatively heavily tattooed. I've blown my knee out a few times. I've split my head open a few times. None of these things even come close to the pain that this
women say
administer.
It's worse than labor.
I've never had one, but I've heard.
I had a friend call in the middle of the night asking for a ride to the hospital when he had this happen, and he actually was like screaming and crying in the backseat of the car and ended up vomiting all over the backseat of our car because of the amount of pain he was in.
Never goes to the doctor. Like, no, I'm fine. And at 4:30 in the morning, I think I need to go to the doctor. And I look up. There's no color in his face. He's clammy, and he's, like, shaking in pain. And
I could barely breathe, man. It was
terrible.
Oh, my
God! Get dressed! Go! And I'm just driving as fast as I can. Like, please don't be his appendix, like, worrying that he's going to be sitting there and it's just going to explode or something.
What do you think that would smell like? Exploded appendix.
It would be all inside of you, so I don't know.
It'd be Duff McKagan from Guns N' Roses talked about when he had a real heavy drinking problem for a long time and his pancreas was all messed up. And he said that he actually had a burst pancreas. And when they went to the hospital and they cut him open, like steam came out because like your pancreatic acid or whatever, it was like he had some H.R. Giger thing happening inside where he was like eating away at his own. But he's like, because his stomach was all swollen, so he couldn't figure out why. And he said that it was basically like he had sort of a Jiffy Pop thing going on inside.
Oh, yeesh.
And they cut him open. It's like a tsssst, and he was like Mr. Butterball.
Oh.
The kidney stone, now is that like a conglomeration of minerals or something?
Mm-hmm. I guess so. There's a few different kinds of kidney stones. I've never had either of these biopsied, so I don't know what chemical composition my kidney stones are, but it's a pretty likely guess that it's calcium.
People who drink a lot of milk and get a lot of calcium, but the problem is she said even if, because he used to drink a lot of milk and then he got the first one and he cut back, but she said as soon as you've had one, you're then prone to them.
So
she even has people on like low calcium diets that get them.
So this isn't one of those things where like a broken bone heals stronger or something. This
no.
is like once. Now
this is a kidney stone makes more.
Yeah.
I had a friend of mine. I used to work with this guy Todd who had the worst luck. It was like in the space of time I knew him, I think his house was robbed twice. He was robbed at gunpoint in the street once. He had three kidney stones, and a car ran over him and fractured his pelvis.
Oh, jeez.
So he was. But the thing is, it was kind of like hanging out with Def Leppard, in that you always felt like the lightning was going to go to your left and hit that guy. So you'd sort of keep him around as like an S magnet because you knew it wasn't going to hit you. But anyway, so he was talking about how the kidney stone. He's like, well, you know, the thing is, the kidney stone really just wants to get out, and so it's trying to find a way out of your body. He went in like the third time, and they did some weird thing where they blew it up.
Yeah, that will happen if you have a large kidney stone
that's not going to come out.
Exactly, that's the only way that they can do it.
Sonic, Here's even worse. My friend is pregnant right now and has, like, a bunch of really big kidney stones that are painful as hell. And because she's pregnant, they can't do anything.
Ah, so it's just so, not to make you relive this whole thing again, but before we move on, I just have to know how this all sort of came out. So you go to the hospital.
Literally.
And then what did they just sedate you and then wait for the thing to come out, or do they just
They gave me a couple of shots of some pretty heavy narcotic of some sort, and the first shot took the edge off. The second shot got rid of the pain, and at that point I just kind of hung out.
Whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Stone schmoan.
Yeah.
But it moved it. It something happened and it moved. It took like 3 days last time, and it passed while we were still at the ER.
And so, is it just it's not moving like under its own power or something. It comes out as you relieve yourself.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's just the flow of things. You know, kidneys, as they flush out all the toxins and extra water and such and push that down into the bladder, and then you pee it all out.
And I'm wondering if because they were hydrating him with an IV, that maybe he was like, you know, lots of hydration, and he had to go to the bathroom.
Just like one of those things when you clean out the rain gutter by just sticking the hose in one end and waiting for everything to
like
blow out the opposite.
Blast all the gravel out.
Oh, awesome. Or gophers do the same thing with gophers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so, well, I'm glad you're past it.
Yeah, hey.
Jesus. The thing you were talking about, so my first ever job in like promotion was with a record label before social networking, so I know how hard it is to like go around and flyer things and do things and have to actually work. And I still have these moments of like, because I hated Twitter. I didn't even want Twitter. And then everybody told me how important it was and you have to do this. And I get it, and I will sing its praises now for your business. But I realize like I'm sitting in the hospital like updating people who want to eat our sandwiches.
Right.
You know what I mean? I'm like, not sure we're going to make it. Oh, no, now he has to go into X-ray.
Well, you got a whole thing.
Now we're not going to be able to.
It's like people get, there's like an iPhone app or something where it's like people can actually go, there's a, mm-hmm. they place an order with that, and then it's like magically goes. So people could order and it actually is just like waiting there for
it's
them when
the
they get that done.
The big-ass sandwiches iPhone app.
Really, it is It is a many splendored age. Hello, sir, madam is the case. Maybe you're on the Rick Emerson radio program, and good day to you.
Hello?
Yep. Yes, yeah. Hello. Hi, it's you. Yes.
Oh, hi. Sorry. I thought there'd be a screener or something. Hey, I was wondering if you got my email on Facebook there.
If I got your email on Facebook there, could you try to be more vague, because I'm not quite...
Subject matter, Lynette Frohms.
Wow.
Hold on a second. You're asking me if I got a message from me on Facebook about Squeaky Fromm.
Hey, you haven't written me back, so I'm just going to call.
All right, hold on a second. Let me just... Let's see. Here we go. Squeaky Fromm. I'm opening up now. Since you're here, though, why don't we not show everybody the math? Why don't you just... what is the observation, sir?
Yeah. That's fine. I just can't listen to the show. I'm unfortunately too poor to subscribe at the moment, but I listen to Legion of News. But I did a little internet sleuthing. She's going to be on Internet Inside Edition tonight. But I passed you on her address and her phone number in case you felt brave.
I'm so unclear about what's happening. Are you telling me that you actually sent me Squeaky Fromm's phone number? Not that that's not awesome, because it is. Let's have no illusions about that. But are you telling me that this is something you, in fact, sent me? Here it is.
Who's Squeaky Fromm?
Yes, it is.
Squeaky Fromm is probably the most famous of the Manson girls.
Yeah.
She's the one who tried to kill Gerald Ford.
And the spelling's all bad because I was on my phone and all, but I verified it. They show her house on Inside Edition, and if you Google Map that, it's the same house.
If you Google Map it,
I totally want to call Squeaky Fromm.
So,
also, sir, by the way, if you can't afford the Rick Emerson Show, we have the Rick Emerson Show grant, which is available to people who email us and give us a good reason. And I would say, giving us Squeaky Fromm's
phone number. I was
hoping
this was a good reason.
That is an awesome reason, sir.
This is the very definition of a good reason. So, because we've got like a chain of fantastic things happening. A, you're watching Inside Edition about Squeaky Fromm. B, you identify, you actually make a note of the house number where she lives. C, you then have the presence of mind to actually go on Google Maps and determine her phone number, which I don't even know if those two are connected. Is it like you look up her address and it just gives you the phone mm-hmm. number?
No, I had to do a little bit of backwards way. It was pretty easy to do. I don't want to give it away just in case.
All right.
I don't want everybody in the world calling her. They'll change that number right away, I'm sure.
I mean, if pressed, you can just say that it came to you in a dream or something. You know, the great Gazoo gave it to you. And then that you actually thought, I have now contact information for one of the Manson girls. To whom should I give this? Who is it that might appreciate
this, you came to me first.
That's right. So thank you, my friend. God bless you, sir. All right. Well, I'll tell you what. I have got... Okay, I'm seeing it here now. I do have your information. This is Josh, correct?
Yeah, I didn't really want my name given out, but that's all right.
Because you're the only Josh in Portland. There's plenty of you. Don't worry about it.
All right, well...
it's fine.
I'll fix this in post. All right, Josh, I'll tell you what. I've got your information. We'll contact you.
You never do.
No, I never do. That's a lie, by the way. That's just that's a tissue of deception. When I say that I'll fix it in post, that never happens. Not once. But no, I will contact you later on, and we will hook you up with one of the Emerson grants that we give away. We do 10 of those a month. That is a 1 month subscription. So thank you, my friend.
Hey, that's great. I'll let you get on with the show too. But yeah, if you watch that clip, they have a clip posted online, and you Google Map that, it's definitely the same location. So I guarantee that. I don't know when the number will change, but I know that's the house and the number. Thought I'd pass it on to you.
Awesome. All right. Thank you, sir.
Get that grant. Thank you very much.
There you go. That's all right. There you go. That's Josh.
He's earning his grant.
Get that grant.
Yes.
Wow. All right. So I saw it here. So here we go. Subject line, Lynette Fromm. There you go. Yeah. She's the redheaded chick that was always hanging out with Charles Manson, and who inexplicably has been paroled, which makes no sense because, she's like full on screaming crazy and, you know, tried to kill a president a while back, like Travis Bickle style.
I just always knew it was the Manson girls.
It's a strange time in which we're living. It really boggles the imagination.
I would imagine that you would get kind of a retracted sentence for trying to kill Gerry Ford anyways, all the presidents.
Because it was just a matter of time till he fell into a blender
exactly.
or something
at some point.
It's like, well, it's not like he was one of the major presidents. So, you know, it's...
It just goes right into a pulping machine of some kind.
He doesn't count.
All right, well, the Rick Emerson program and the Squeaky Fromm discussions contained therein are brought to you by any number of folks, including but not limited to Mr. Michael Beatty. He is the proprietor of The Cleaning Solution. You can find out more about him at 971-533-3211. The Cleaning Solution is, as the name implies, a cleaning service that operates right here in the greater Portland area. And they offer both home and business services, so residential, your office, anything your feet might touch, as they put it. That just means it means carpet, it means hardwood, it means upholstery, it means tile, it means stone. Anything that you are going to be walking on, you're going to be sitting on, that your pet, if your Dawn's pet especially, might defile at some point during the night when you're less likely to actually have the mental acuity to clean it up properly.
Maybe the grease-covered bottom of a food cart?
Entirely possible.
Oh, I don't know if they want to go there.
Oh, no, no, no. See, there's nowhere that Michael Beatty can't clean. There's nothing that he can't remove.
It's greasy.
I will say this. The thing about the dog, too, just to touch back on that for a second, because you said, was it yesterday that your dog was sort of hurling all over the place?
Yeah.
And see, it's like they almost... And it's like they picked the middle of the night to do it. And during the middle of the night, you only got the two choices. You have the wake up entirely and actually remove the former lunch entirely, like from the shag or whatever. But then ruining your own sleep in the process because you've completely disrupted your REM cycle. Or you do that like just enough kind of a thing so you can then get back to sleep and get like two more hours. But then you just got that... And you know what I'm talking about when I talk about you have that crust happening in the carpet.
They have a dog. They know.
See, and that's the thing. That never comes out of there.
Hairball.
I mean, it just becomes like inextricably bonded. Yeah. It's like some sort of covalent connection that happens with the carpet, and it can never be removed.
Except by a professional.
Exactly. Because your frail human mind cannot conceive of any method for getting all of that junk out of the carpet. And so by the time you move out of your house, I mean, it's just the sheer tonnage of filth that is probably contained in your carpet. I mean, it's just awful. And that's just the stuff that you can see. So
right,
here's the
thanks,
thing.
Rick.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
That's why we have hardwoods.
There is a solution to all of this. And
I tell
all
you
do.
Never go to his house ever.
You just simply press these seven buttons. That's 971-533-3211. Whether you are a citizen at your home or whether you are an employee at work, you're a manager, you're a boss, you're whatever, you got something at your place of business or at your house that you want to get cleaned, whether it's tile, upholstery, marble, whether you were trying to get it restored to the way it was or whether it's brand new and you want to keep it looking good for the duration of your home, they can put you on a maintenance program as well. Most importantly, they are a proud supporter of the Rick Emerson Radio Program and all of the content here at the Emerson News Network, which is reason enough for you to give them your patronage. And it's 971-533-3211. Mr. Michael Beatty, the owner and operator of The Cleaning Solution. 971-533-3211.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
I believe it's time that we do our penis watch.
It's always time for a penis watch. There's no bad time for a penis watch, Dawn Taylor. This is your penis watch for Tuesday, right here on the Rick Emerson Radio Program.
Take a look at my enormous penis and my troubles start a-melting away. I take a look at my enormous penis, and everything is going my way.
Here's Don Taylor with your Penis Watch for Tuesday.
A student at the India Institute of Technology in Kanpur, suspected to be under depression, inserted a pencil into his penis, after which he was taken to the hospital in critical condition.
Why?
No, no.
IIT Registrar Sanjeev Kasselkar said 24-year-old Rakesh Kumar, a second-year M.Tech student in industrial and management engineering, screamed in pain and was taken to a private hospital and admitted into the ICU. Kasselkar, however, refused to describe Rakesh as mentally ill, saying he was quite a normal student and was not under any treatment. He inserted the 6-inch pencil so deep that it reached the urinary bladder, said Dr. Rajesh Agarwal, superintendent of the hospital where Rakesh is admitted. He said that during observation, Rakesh told him that he had been inserting a pencil a little bit at a time over the past 6 months and derived pleasure in doing so.
So this is this like a just like some sort of a swinging a couple bats in the on deck circle or something? Like you just sort of, you don't want to do it all at once, or?
Well, the doctor said he was doing the same thing today, but suddenly the whole pencil went inside. This is the first time we are tackling such a case, and he has to undergo an operation for removing the pencil.
All right.
I was going to say, like, what happened to just cutting, but he was actually deriving pleasure from it?
Apparently he was enjoying it.
We were just talking about that.
About shoving things into...
Yes.
In what context would you have, quote, just been talking about that?
I don't remember who we were talking to, but we were talking about isn't it something like some kind of exam that men have to have done,
STD.
Like for prostate?
Right.
Or
talking to the
with the glass rod.
That.
Right. Our friend came into town for a hip hop show, and we were talking about it, and those two were, they're like, and I mean, I don't know, I'm a girl, so I was like, does that hurt? Like when somebody puts something in there? And they were like, yes, it hurts, a lot.
All right, well, let me clarify that. I don't have any personal knowledge of shoving anything into
a friend of yours told you that.
But it's a test that they give you. It's a swab.
Well, there's a swab. Yeah, it's not like the, where it's just like a Q-tip, right? Like it's not. Right.
Isn't it a really, really big one?
Well, again, it's like I'm not really sure. But I don't think it's a.
Maybe it's not.
I don't think it's a glass rod.
I think you're
thinking of Dr. Mengele.
Oh, maybe.
But I would imagine it's like. Well, I mean, it's the way they swab anything, I would imagine. It's just like a Q-tip or whatever. But that's a thing. Well, and I wonder if it's a whole deal where you got to be, you must be in a flaccid state? Or is it strange? Or is it a thing where it's the opposite, where you must be demonstrably turgid? You require tumescence for the. Because otherwise, it's just like, it's just like you're shooting pool with a rope. You got nothing.
If you're the doctor getting tested for STDs, you're. Not going to be too excited.
No, probably not.
I will tell you that I once had a boyfriend back when I was quite young, and he ended up passing along to me the genital warts, which I had to be treated for.
I thought you were going to say him passing along an anecdote or something. Here's a funny story.
The genital warts, and I was treated for that, and then of course they said, now he's going to have to go. And I was a little upset, as you can imagine, because, he got them from somewhere.
Yeah.
That wasn't me.
Right.
And so when he came back from the doctor and said that they had done this examination that involved shoving something up his urethra and that it was extremely painful, I was actually a little happy about that.
See,
really.
I would be in your.
I was like, was that uncomfortable for you? That's too freaking bad.
Maybe the kid was just so depressed that the pain was. I don't know.
He was defocusing, as they say. Some chicks carve, he shoves.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's a long ways up there, though, man. Oh.
Really? Well, no, let's talk about urethras
like
for a second.
Yeah.
Now, so when Sarah and I had to explain the context in which this happened to Dawn the first time I mentioned it, but Sarah and I went to a porn store a few years ago because she'd never been to one. It was when she first moved here. Mm-hmm. She was first working on the show, and she said that she had never been to, an adult store of any kind because, as we determined the other day when we were guesting on Fun Employment, It's either that Sarah remained innocent about many things for a longer period, and to a later age than many girls, or that Dawn just sort of blows the curve in the opposite direction, where
it'd be a little above.
Dawn was a bit of an early starter, or they're meeting in the middle. But Sarah had never been to a porn store, and I'm like, well, we'll go. It'll be a kooky radio bit.
Yeah.
So we get let me get my Marantz, and so we get this the VCR sized recorder from the promotions office. And in retrospect, it's kind of strange we didn't get booted out because we're walking around a porn store where there's a bunch of guys shuffling around not making eye contact with any of the other guys, because it's like you're all sort of hoping that, like, if none of you notices each other, then, like, you're not really there. But then, you know, Sarah, you know, who's, you know, a young, spry, attractive girl, is sort of bouncing around the store saying, "What's this?" And, like, picking up, like, a huge phallus with, like, you know, like, spikes sticking out of the side of it. And She's like, it was at a fantasy store. And they got a pretty wide selection there, as we found out, because she's at one of the glass cases. And there's this thing. I mean, it looked like some weird hell device that you would use. It looked like something that, like, the Mossad would use to get information out of a guy. Where he's, like, underneath a swinging light bulb, and they're going, like, "What is the deactivation code?" You know, "I don't know." You know, and then, and apparently, and we didn't know what it was. And I'm like, "I don't know. I don't really want to, you know, I don't think we should." And by that time, she's already waving it. She's like, "Sir, what is this?" And he came over and he explained that it is, in fact, it's a series of electrodes that attach to your urethra. And then, see, and I know that I've hit pay dirt here when Dawn has a look of shock and confusion on her face. It is a, I wish I could describe what it looked like, but it was like a belt with a bunch of sort of wires coming off of it that ended in little silver clips. And then a box with a knob and a gauge, and the only thing I can compare it to is that it looks like one of those things that, like, your dad would use to run a Lionel train set around the Christmas tree.
Like the thing they did on Jackass, where they attached the electrodes and...
Or like in the beginning of Ghostbusters, when he's, like, pulling the knob, and the, you know, the guy goes, "I see some wavy lines," and he gets zapped. So apparently you affix the clips to the urethra, and then either you or your partner or whoever... Then increases the voltage, I guess, gradually or maybe all at once, depending on whether you've been a bad little boy that day, and it you derive some kind of pleasure from it. And it was the thing that, like...
That's
my thing, is, like, I don't even know how that affixes.
There's
it.
There's no clipping to a urethra.
No.
There's just jamming into it.
I don't know. I can't even get change out from underneath the couch when I drop it, so I don't even know.
But
know.
That leads me to believe that between this story and the fact that a rather well-known big store of necessities for that kind of stuff sells that.
That there must be enough to justify.
There's got to be a percentage of people who derive pleasure from that area.
Yeah, and I, you know, it's like I'm not passing judgment. I just
I
don't understand. It's just the mechanics of it were sort of what eluded me.
Oh yeah,
I
can't imagine unless there's.
Yeah, I'm completely confused about how something like that would work.
Yeah. Size openings.
Let's see here. Let me just get a couple of these text messages. If you want to text us via Skype, you can do. You can call us. You can call us at 503-505-6964. Somebody was confused about how this worked. You can also text us via Skype. It's just Rick Emerson Show. This one says, "Are you going to be calling Squeaky Fromm live on the air?" No, Rachel, we're not going to be doing that. I think I might want to actually confirm that that is in fact her telephone number. And you know, especially if it is her telephone number. That's the thing you probably have to prepare for a bit. I mean, why don't you just ask
that.
Squeaky Fromm? Yeah. Let's see. We've got this. This says, this is from Cheryl saying, "Please tell me you did not eat all the bugles that I got General Mills to send." No, we haven't even opened them. The box is totally, it is unmolested at this point. It has not even been opened. I haven't looked inside it. I only know that it's the chocolate peanut butter bugles because it says so on the outside. I have no idea how many bugles are in there.
That's like my favorite.
I can promise you that it's going to be Sam's one when we leave.
Have you had them? Have you had the chocolate peanut butter
chocolate
bugles?
I've never
butter?
Even heard of these.
You have no idea.
It's two favorite things together.
You may need to break into them before the end of the show.
It is so unbelievably amazingly good.
Is there
good.
Wheat in it?
Well, it's bugles.
It's corn, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I suppose. I mean, that's what the label says. I don't know that it's
me itchy.
I don't know there's anything. I don't know that it's corn like you'd like spot growing in a field or anything. I mean, I think you know, I think it's corn like Easy Cheese is dairy. I mean, but you know, that's just my assessment.
The vaguest interpretation therein.
And then better late than never. This one says about the pictures of your penis. So long as the screen is turned off on the iPhone, you cannot do anything. You cannot accidentally take a photo of any area of your body. I got my new iPhone. We were talking about this morning. I was in the... Just to tell the story very, very briefly, because Dawn has heard this a few times now. I was in the bathroom yesterday before we went on the air, and in Legion of News, we don't take any breaks. It's a solid hour all the way through. And I'm kind of a creature of habit, and I got to brush my teeth, and, you know, maybe whatever else you need to attend to. And so I was in there, and, you know, I was turning off my phone because I wanted to ring during the show. And so I'm using the bathroom, and I thought, well, I'll turn my phone off, you know, during this. I'm a big believer in multitasking so that it doesn't ring. And I haven't really ever – my BlackBerry didn't have a camera, so I haven't really ever needed a camera. I mean, not for years. And I don't really know how this one works. And then as I'm using the bathroom, I just hear this like ching, you know, and it's like the weird shutter and then the film advance sound that they put in there that means you've just taken a photo of something. Add to that the fact that this iPhone has a camera on the front and the back.
Oh, wow.
There's really no direction you can point this where you won't, you like, it doesn't, you know, like you're taking the risk of taking a photo of two different things at the same time, like on opposite sides of the room.
Well, that's handy.
And so then I thought, well, that's interesting. And I put it in my pocket. And then as we were doing the show, I mentioned this to Dawn. And then I started thinking about the phenomenon of the pocket dial.
Oh.
And I started being terrified that I was going to shift the wrong way. And then, like, you guys were going to get a picture of my testicles in the mail or something. And then I would have no reasonable explanation as to why that happened.
It would be so close that it would just look like a blurry mess of fabric.
That's true.
Yeah. So apparently that was that's a fear that I needn't have.
Lock your screen before
be
you
careful
put it in
multitasking
your
above an open toilet. Too.
Yeah.
I've lost some really good electronic stuff because of that.
You don't even know. So Kristen Bowie when the Android phones first came out, Kristen Bowie got an Android phone, and I'm really not laughing. It's just one of those things that are so grimly amusing. She got an Android phone, and I swear to God, the next day she dropped it into a deep mud puddle.
Oh my gosh!
Oh yeah.
Didn't that happen at the radio station?
Probably. She was all gimped up. Her ankle was broken or something.
The Google phone.
Yeah. She's like, look at my new phone. And right into the hole. And I think she tried to do the thing of taking it back to the store. And sort of playing dumb, which I tried to do after I dropped. I had this phone a few years ago. It was just a regular, you know, it was just like the regular cell phone. And I did this Homer Simpson thing where I was checking my messages, and I somehow I dropped the phone, and it bounced on the edge of a cup of coffee, like sort of teasing me, and then it just plunged in, and I just reached in after it, and it was unbelievably hot because you know. Mug of coffee,
yeah.
And then I, you know, ow, and I bring my hand, and then I put my hand back in, ow, and then I put my hand back like three different times. I take the phone, I shake it, you know, I shake it free of all the water. I towel out the inside. I take my phone, which has been dropped fully submerged for like 30 seconds in a cup of coffee, to the Verizon store. And I walk inside, I go, my phone just quit working. I don't have any idea why. I don't have any explanation for it. And the guy said, well, Did anything unusual happen to it? No. What kind of an outfit are you? What kind of is this, a clip joint? And I just had to do my mock outrage. What I did not know, but what then was revealed to me, is that there are a series of stickers they put on the inside that turn a different color if it becomes wet or moist in any way.
Oh.
So I hand it to the guy, and I'm like, I cannot believe the shoddy equipment that you have tried to put hundreds of dollars in. Sir, I am outraged. And he just opens the battery case and goes, yeah, it's been submerged. Buy a new one over there. Bye now. And I was just like, okay. And I walked away. And
the guy I loaned it to must have dropped it himself.
Damn wife of mine. Never again will a woman handle electronics in my home. All right. You guys have been here for like 5 days. If you want to stay, that's fine. I feel like bad I'm keeping you from your business. If you have a timeline by which you need to leave.
No. We seem to be doing one of our extra long shows today.
Here's the thing is,
we've been running about a half an hour behind schedule ever since we started. So.
The thing is,
we run late some days.
And, you know, you guys probably are familiar with this. We sort of own the joint, so there's no one to make me leave.
Yes. Exactly.
This is Dawn Taylor at the news desk.
A Florida man.
I'm sorry, a man from where?
Florida. Who lost an arm after trying to rescue some baby birds, nearly lost his other arm trying to help an alligator. Alexander Alcantare spotted the two and a half meter alligator, which had been hit in the head with an arrow, in water near his Miami-Dade home about 9 p.m. Sunday. I figured I'd trap it and get it some medical attention, he said.
That's always a good idea.
The alligator attacked him, though, biting him on his good arm as he tried to restrain it.
Anytime you're in a situation where you have to use the phrase, my good arm.
Your only arm.
One should tread lightly when interacting with nature in any form.
I couldn't really handle him too good, Mr. Alcantare said. The guy I asked to help me, he got scared and let go of the rope, and since I couldn't secure his mouth, he got me.
Jeez.
Mr. Alcantara told NBC Miami he had lost his other arm when he fell on an electric fence while trying to rescue some baby birds.
What?
His arm was burned so badly it had to be amputated. That's why I couldn't handle the alligator too good like before, but I did pull him out of the water, he said.
Too good like.
Mr. Alcantara later called police, only for them to cite him for possession of an alligator. And even worse for the animal fan, the alligator will now have to be euthanized because it bit him. Mr. Alcantara, who has also been attacked by a tiger in the Congo, said the alligator reacted to him as he would expect, That's what happens when you deal with wild animals. He said, you're going to get bitten.
There's so many things that I want to say about this.
As is often the case, I think we have ended the story knowing less than when we entered it.
Wow.
It all made, I guess, a sort of Florida kind of sense, yeah. Until the thing about being bitten by a tiger in the Congo.
Maybe he's just resigned himself to, I'm going to help the animals no matter what, and if it happens, that's what happens.
Whether they want me to or not.
So he's sort of like, maybe he's a grizzly man who hasn't found his species. And so he's just kind of going, cycling through one at a time. Gila monster, no. Guppy, maybe. And he landed on alligator, and he also chose poorly there.
Yeah, I would agree.
Jesus, God almighty. All right. You were listening to the Rick Emerson radio program. And let's say, for example, I mean, just a hypothetical flight of fancy, that one is going to be starting a brand new business, and one wants to interact with a wide variety of customers. Well, it is a big world out there, full of a wonderful, blissful variety of people and cultures and languages. And one of those languages that is gaining increased prominence in our world is Spanish. And if you were taught Spanish in school, well, first of all, if you were taught Spanish in school recently, you may, in fact, know how to speak it with some degree of competence and efficacy. You may be able to actually hold a conversation. If you, and I think we're all around the same age here, if you took Spanish back when I was a slip of a youth, you probably learned like nothing, because they packed you into a classroom filled with like 55 other kids, half of whom would spend all morning huffing like paint thinner in the drama room or something.
Drinking Robitussin was the girl I sat next to.
See, I think you and I were actually in the same class in the same school. Did she listen to a lot of music by The Cure?
Oh yeah, we did.
Looked like she ironed her hair in the morning.
Totally.
Yes, kind of had a vacant stare.
It wasn't ironing, it was crimping.
Did she drink a lot of Robitussin? Was it sort of like a preschool ritual, or was it during the school day?
She, in between every class, drank an entire bottle of Robitussin because it got her somewhat drunk.
That almost seems like a thing that you would have to shoplift if you're in high school, because even then, Robitussin was probably a little pricey, right?
How much could cold medicine possibly be in the late 80s?
I think it had codeine in it when we were growing up. I may be making that up.
I think that's from Canada.
Oh, maybe.
I don't think the meth making
wasn't so big back then yet.
So you decided to get it.
I'm sick at several different stores. I don't know.
All I know is you were just getting this girl. She would always do it in the car, and it's like the back seat was like just filled with empty Robitussin bottles. I mean, it was just it was mountains of them.
Yeah, ours was a cheerleader too.
I seem to have done that thing where I turned a discussion of Castalia Language Center, one of our fine sponsors, into a discussion of meth and teenagers abusing their body with dextromethorphan.
Clara Grebel, you are such a patient woman.
But I learned no Spanish in high school. I would love to learn Spanish now.
Well, I'm glad you said that, Lisa, because it gives me a less awkward way to extricate myself from this particular conundrum. Castalia Language Center is a small private school in downtown Portland. They offer Spanish language classes for adults. And so we run into two types of people. There's people who took it in school but didn't really feel like they learned it and they want to try to take it now. Or people who have kids who are actually learning it, you know, really efficiently, because kids now are being taught Spanish from kindergarten and first grade on. Once you get to be an adult, you just don't learn the same way you do when you're a kid. Because when you're a kid, I think you just have fewer borders in your head, and you're not freaked out by the concept of having to master an entirely different language, and your brain can just sort of absorb it. It really does multitask it. You get to be an adult, you got to learn in a more deliberate fashion. So at Castalia, it's adults-only classes, and they limit the class size to 8 people. So it's a comfortable, relaxed environment. They have classes happen different days, different hours of the day, so they can work with your schedule. Find out more about it by going to PortlandSpanish.com, PortlandSpanish.com. The teacher of the school, Clara Grebel, in addition to forgiving our myriad sins in terms of the delivery of her paid advertisements, also is a native Spanish speaker from Argentina, and she now runs Castalia Language Center, a small private school in downtown Portland. So you can find out more about it. They teach you how to speak Spanish in the way that your brain will accept now that you are an enfeebled adult like myself.
Right?
Find out more at PortlandSpanish.com. Castalia Language Center. They can be reached at PortlandSpanish.com. Once more, let's go to the news desk with Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Un trozo de caimán, mi brazo bueno.
Which means?
An alligator bit my good arm.
Okay, thank you.
A California doctor is being sued for branding his patient's uterus with her name after removing it. Dr. Red Allensad applied an electrocautery device to carve and burn Ingrid Polisivic's first name into her removed uterus during an operation he performed in his Orange County office in 2009, according to The Smoking Gun. Dr. Allenside called the unusual act a friendly gesture, since the patient was a good friend.
Is this like putting your name inside your underwear when you're at camp or something?
It's exactly like
that.
You'd want to keep this.
Just so you don't mix it up with somebody else's uterus.
He told the website he did not want to get it confused with others.
Okay, I was just goofing just now when I said that.
That seems reasonable.
But why do you
say... I mean, if you have a collection of uteri, then I would imagine that you would want them labeled accordingly.
But why did you save them?
I mean...
Why wouldn't you?
Does that de facto then imply that if you go to his house, he's just got some Marlon Brando-esque collection of glass jars in which are the uteruses of various patients?
Well, Ms. Polisivic denies knowing the gynecologist prior to the hysterectomy, although she said she was acquainted with a receptionist in the office. The medical negligence lawsuit said the labeling had, quote, no medically necessary purpose or reason, and called it inexcusably bizarre behavior.
All right, I know that I'm going to sound like a dense guy here, but this is one of those things where I have a problem with distances and relative spans of time. This is why I think it takes me 10 minutes to get everywhere. Like, it doesn't matter if I'm going to Brazil or like down the street. So it is with sizes, because there's never really anything in the foreground of a known scale to give me a sense. Mm. Your uterus is about how big?
Isn't that like,
yeah?
Can't imagine
it's
any
larger than
that.
All right.
A medium-sized cookie?
So he's branding it. Now, like most people, when you say brand, I picture the guy at, like, the Rocking R Ranch or something going, like, hold still, bossy, and he's got the thing on the end of the rod or whatever.
Yeah, he used an electric cauterizing
device. Yeah, like a soldering.
So it's like a soldering iron, though. It's like the thing that they use, like, if they cut one of your arteries or vein or whatever, that they go, tsst, and they cut it closed with that.
Yeah.
So where did they find the uterus?
Well, that I don't know. That I'm really not sure. I have a lot of questions about this story, too, because...
Did he leave it behind at lunch or something? Or
maybe he was using it as a coin purse.
Bob, is this yours? He's using it as a card holder at his Hold'em game.
It's twofold, too. Like, so A, why is he keeping it and branding it? That's over here. And then if she was getting her uterus removed, and it's not like she needs it or was going to keep it, why is she, I mean, really
maybe
a
maybe she was
of
just
it.
Getting it cleaned up.
And how many does he have that he's concerned about getting them mixed up?
All right. Yeah. And also this. Okay, so now, look, I don't know where was it that this happened?
In California.
Okay, so this wasn't like in some third world country where there's a guy, you're sitting on top of a trash can and he's just got like a fish scaler he's cutting you open with or whatever.
That actually does sound like L.A.
So I mean, depending on how many, if you have access to means or not. But so you're at a hospital, you're getting your uterus taken out. Presumably, he's got other people in the operating room with him, right? And it's not like he just can take it out and go, I'll get rid of this later, and stick the thing in his pocket. Somebody would notice that.
It probably gets sit, you know, there's a place.
But it goes into a bag, right? Or a biohazard container or something. And then a guy, I would imagine, at least that's how I would sort of understand it, that it goes into one of those red bags and then it gets incinerated.
Maybe he's like,
or something.
You leave this uterus here and there's a bonus in it for you.
My friend Tim currently has my vas deferens at his house. But when I have,
like, is he keeping it safe for you?
I just gave it to him, or gave them to him.
Not the only one who keeps my parts after surgery.
Dawn came in 2 weeks ago and set part of her femur, bone, on the table.
That's really cool.
No, it is. It's great.
You should use that as a pencil holder. Tim, I had a vasectomy done roughly
and this is like
a year
the,
ago.
Okay, and so this is the snipping, the thing that they cut out.
Yeah. And so after they cut it out and extracted it from me, they just put it on a little tray.
And this is a little, it's like a tubular looking sort of a thing.
Looks like spaghetti.
Yeah.
Yeah, two of them.
Like little macaroni noodles.
Yeah.
All right. And so.
So Brian asked me to keep it, and the doctor said. Well, that's the first time anybody's ever asked me that.
I wonder if more people are asking now than they used to, you know, like maybe 5 years ago, like, hey, you're going to throw that out, you know, because that's, you know, it's like how your dad never wanted to throw anything out because it was worth, you know, because it was like worth something. And
you can put it
in the garage.
It's very fascinating, though. His friend Tim has a whole... medical oddities case. And
this was standard behavior in my family when I was growing up. It was like, I don't think I ever really realized it was that unusual, because whenever someone in my family, if like somebody had kidney stones or something, and they would ask if they could have it, and they'd bring it home like in a little jar.
That way you can charge admission when you bring friends over.
Yeah.
And so so you're there, and so when you get the vasectomy done,
Oh, that's a whole other. Is it just? Story.
I mean, Aaron Duran talked about getting that done, and you know he had you know so where it's just like you know it's like cantaloupes like for days apparently.
Oh, yeah.
But so you're there? Do you put your feet up in stirrups, sort of lady style?
No. Well, I, no.
Because they got access to your area.
It's actually an extraordinarily comfortable like bed of some sort. It was an operating bed, but I was slightly elevated.
Is it like the extraordinarily comfortable environment offered to you by a radio program that lets you talk about your penis and
and your
testicles and
yes, except there's a little bit more clothes involved and my ass isn't all soapy right now.
So you're sitting there now. Are you like in a chair though that reclines and your legs are just sort of spread?
No, actually they It was just a bed. My knees were slightly elevated. Maybe they put some pillows down or something like that. But then they put a blue sheet over the top of me, pulled my junk pile through a little hole in the blue sheet, and proceeded to snip.
And then but they give you like an injection or whatever because they don't want you to feel anything.
But the guy gave him the anesthetic and then started going before it took.
Oh, really? Like they do the dentist where they don't wait until you're like, not numb.
Yeah.
And now, when you said you started going at you. I realize this is the second time in like 2 hours that we're discussing a delicate part of your anatomy and excruciating pain.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, it's what we do. I am what I am. Going at you with, I mean, are we talking scalpel, scissors,
well,
nail gun?
Initially, there was a nurse that came in that shaved everything down.
Oh, that's awkward.
It was extremely awkward.
Female nurse?
It was a female nurse.
In the room, too, like, which was
so
weird.
So you're there in the room.
Well, no. You weren't there for the surgery.
But you were there for the shaving.
Well, no. You weren't there for the shaving. She was just there for the initial
Maybe there were multiple shaving encounters.
But I was there when the guy was like, ooh, let me take a feel.
He told me I have a nice tight sack.
Well, that's nice to hear.
That's what I thought.
The best part, by the way, is before you guys came on today.
You don't get very often, really, I think.
When I was bringing you guys in for the kitchen / green room, Lisa Wood, we're here with Lisa Wood and Brian Wood from Big Ass Sandwiches, which you can find at the intersection of 3rd and Ash downtown. You want to go there right now. The best part is we bring you to the studio. Lisa's like, so what's the procedure with profanity here? What's the policy? And I was like, no, we keep it pretty clean, which I guess is true in a sort of clinical FCC sense.
True.
So your junk pile. All right. So
yeah, there's that.
They have to do the shaving of it first. So they sit you down. You take off your pants. They put you in the chair. You're spreading your legs. Some chick comes in to shave you.
Yeah.
Lisa's not in the room, or she's in the room.
No, I was in the room when the guy was handling him, and then I left.
Why is the guy handling you? What is that about?
You're making this sound just bizarre.
They're going to be doing a procedure on him.
Right?
They've got to actually handle
it. The
guy.
Says,
it's not done
pants.
By robots.
No. It was the consultation.
Is it like where they're like trying to find out if like the tomato is ripe in the produce aisle?
Sort of.
They're tapping it. And...
Well, there was a few questions. Are you sure you want this done? Do you want kids anytime soon? So on and so forth.
I think that's why they made.
Did they make you sign off on it?
I think that's why they made me be in there.
Isn't that a little late in the process to be asking
that's
you
what
after
I would
you're
think.
Already
I
like,
I'm there, I'm ready, I'm signed on.
The junk
on.
Pile has already been pulled through
I think
the whole.
They must
in the
do
thing.
That, though, because of a liability thing.
Oh, yeah.
Because there was this time, actually, a few years ago when I was going to get it done. And then the reason I did not know that, and it's before, I think it's before Laura and I were even married. But just dating, I didn't realize there was like a waiting period. Mm-hmm. It was like I wanted an assault rifle.
Hmm.
They were like, okay, well, you got to go
home.
It's
actually the opposite of that. It's like,
right?
I mean, totally. And they're like, are you single, married, whatever? I'm like, you know, living together. And they're like, okay, well, come back in a week, you know, like with her.
Yeah.
And then I just, you know, and then I got busy.
He asked me to.
Yeah.
And then he said, drop your pants.
Okay, so you have left the room, and then the chick comes in, and did she say, like, I'm going to have to shave you now?
Yeah. Yeah, she did.
And I mean,
did you say, hooray?
No, I was actually really uncomfortable with the situation because this is a girl I've never met. And there was.
What celebrity did she most resemble?
I honestly don't remember. The only thing I remember was that she was throwing things back and forth while she was shaving me down and squirting this hot soapy water all over everything, and it was running down, and I was uncomfortable and not happy, and the doctor was over right next to me making small talk about my tattoos.
So do you like to fish?
Yeah.
Back on the issue of the nurse for a second. I know it's a bit fuzzy because you're probably doped. Do they give you like a Valium in addition to the sedative?
No,
or is it just,
nothing like that. It was just local anesthetic.
Just in terms of the nurse and her aesthetic, would you give it like on a pass-fail? Would you thumbs up or thumbs down? That's what every guy wonders,
yeah,
right? Because you don't
want to
be become, I mean, you're probably not going to become aroused in any way. Anyway, she's, you know, she's taking
exactly.
up a blade anywhere near your business.
I can't remember either.
I think I'm going to say pass only because if she was a fail, I probably would have remembered that.
And you wonder if the doctor takes that into consideration when they're doing it, like the vasectomy thing. If he actually, I mean, you know, they're probably not supposed to, but you wonder if he, if you know, if he, if that becomes an issue. Like I know tattoo artists who. I knew a girl who was a tattoo artist, and she would occasionally have men. She would be tattooing like on the inside of like one of their thighs,
oh,
or like
yeah.
on their stomach. But if they, but they would be exposed, and they would become excited at some point during the tattoo. And she said it was like the, and she said that she had actually on at least one occasion had a man reach the fullest of fulfillments.
Wow.
While she was tattooing him, because
wow.
he found, because it was like a whole, the pain triggered some weird endorphin thing in his head, and he achieved a state of bliss while being tattooed. And I mean, which is just the, you know, and I wonder if that happens with this too, because, you know, it's probably people who find the whole thing. Your brain reacts to anxiety in different ways and so forth.
He was about to have a scalpel down there. I don't think.
Yeah, I would say I would hope that that doesn't happen, but I wouldn't be surprised. I guess it's like going to get a legitimate massage. You
right,
know?
Yeah.
It might go off. It might not. It's kind of a 50-50
shot. And think about the story we just heard about the guy in the pencil.
That's true, yeah.
Pretty much anything is possible with people and penises.
How long, once that was done, how long did the actual procedure take? I mean, it's pretty short, I would think.
It was about a grand total of 15 minutes.
Wow.
But
was,
did he actually slice before the anesthetic?
Well, no. It was, I don't know if there was any slicing occurring before the anesthetic kicked in, but there was, all of a sudden, it felt like somebody had clamped some alligator clips to either side of my testicles.
Oh, wow.
And just pushed down really, really hard.
Now, I wonder if that is a, if that... I've only ever seen it. I was just gonna. I've only ever seen it from David Duchovny's perspective. There was. I was watching the Californication the other day where he gets the vasectomy, and it's all shot from his side. So you see the doctor looking up over the sheet and saying, "Like we're almost done down here."
Oh.
But I wonder if they actually have, you know, like not a vice, obviously, but some things that like kind of grab it and hold it steady.
It certainly feels like.
So
it.
Maybe they were in fact clamping it, not unlike they do for larger women sometimes when that needs to be that area needs to be exposed for childbirth.
You would think though that they would.
It's true.
He would give a flick or
totally
something
true.
And say, like, tell me if you can feel that
yeah.
instead of just, gah!
Does it hurt when I slice this? and so then you finish. He takes out the area, you know, the vas deferens, and he says, like, here you go. And did he show it to you, like, just as a courtesy, and then he was reaching for the trash bag, and you're like, hold on now.
None of that. He actually didn't show me anything. As soon as... I heard a sizzle and saw these miniature puffs of smoke
awesome.
Erupt from my crotch. And at that
That's
point,
the cotter, I think.
Yeah, I figured at that point, you know, I was about 5 minutes out. And so he finished everything up. There was a tiny little incision that required 2 stitches, I think, or something like that. But everything was buttoned up, quote unquote. And I looked over and there was Baz Deferens hanging out on the little metal tray. And I said, hey, can I have those?
And what did they just? I mean, what did they put it in for you to take it home?
They
like
put
a
it
jar
in a little specimen jar.
Not unlike the business that your femur.
Yes.
Okay. So then, just to wrap all this up, so it's over at your friend Tim's house.
Yes, it is.
Did he ask for it? Or did you offer it?
Well, it was kind of a combination of the two. He came over to my house, and I had them sitting on our mantle. And he said, "What's that?" And I said, "That's my vas deferens." And he said, "That's awesome. You know, I have a medical collection of odd things." And I said, "Well, then, my friend, you need those."
I love Portland. I love everything about Portland.
Yeah.
I love the show. Did you ever consider having them bronzed, maybe? Or just, you know, or maybe put in like a really ornate, oversized frame, like a collectible postage stamp.
I want to make them into a four-knuckle ring.
Yeah.
This guy someday needs to hear the nerve-ending story, because he's the guy that would appreciate that.
Maybe later.
Here's what we'll do. In just a moment, we'll do a final visit at the news desk. We'll do our Geek Watch, and we'll have the top five, and then we'll let you guys actually get out to where the sun is, because you've been in this like darkened coffin of a room with us for like
I
an hour and a half.
Room.
It is pleasant.
Well, it is the sort of, you know, what I learned is, and I'm not the, you know, I was never really much of a Stern fan, but the one thing that I read, someone said this about him, they said that one of the things about Stern is that he learned the trick of just keeping people in a dimly lit room mm-hmm. until they forgot they were there, and then just started talking about like their sex lives. So our variation on that is like, tell me about the time your crotch was in a vice or whatever. So we'll do the Geek Watch here in a second. We'll do the top five worst songs performed by actors. Real quickly, just because I alluded to this and you asked about it just moments ago. I apologize to the people who have sort of heard this image described once already and didn't ever want to hear it again. I'll try to be brief and sort of circumspect about it. So my sister years ago used to work at is it Best Kaiser? Is that the hospital here? When she lived in Portland, but she was an OBGYN nurse. Still is, I guess. But she lives in the. She's a godless Canadian now. But she lived here, and she was a OBGYN nurse. And I was staying. It was actually the same trip. I was a younger. I was like 19 or something. I came here to see Metallica. I think at Portland Meadows. It was the same trip where I went to the Dancing Bear, and it was all sad. And I was like, the girl was. I had to leave through the first song, but the girl was all it was like a whole bad thing.
There's nothing worse than a sad stripper.
No, she was like stripping to. I think it was like she was stripping to Closer by Nine Inch Nails.
Oh.
And it was like we told the story with Greg and Sarah last week. And I was like, what? Who touched you and how that you are dancing? I have to leave. You know, like even the boobs weren't enough to get me to stay for that. I was like, this is depressing. I had to stop by my sister's hospital to get her house key because she was working the graveyard shift. And she's like, come by the hospital when you get into Portland. I'll give you the key and go to my house and crash whatever. I'm like, fine. So I go there and she's on the job. And she's like, hey, well, you know, do you want a tour? And, my mom was a nurse. So I kind of grew up in hospitals, but sure, why not? And so she's showing me where everything is. And it's all kinds of awkward. There's this thing, the warming thing that they put the baby in, which they call the baby oven, apparently.
Oh,
they don't call
incubator.
That when the parents are around, they don't call it that. But that's what all the nurses go. They go, sure, this is the baby oven. We don't call it that most of the time, but that's the warming thing they put the kid in.
Hey, one of the bikers on Sons of Anarchy, the episode I just saw, episode 3 of the first season, referred to that as the toaster.
Is that right? It was when Tara is there and Jax has just had the kid?
Yeah. When the kid gets out of the toaster, then you'll be able to take it home.
And so she showed me the baby oven, and we walk by some other room, and it was like, you want to go to some other room? And it was like... It was like that sequence in the original V miniseries where they have brought Elizabeth, the leader of the resistance, in to be interrogated by Diana. And you just see like a huge variety of fearful looking metallic implements and a blowtorch in the room. And then right as the door is shutting, you just hear this kind of like a, ah! And that came from one of the rooms sort of down the hall. And right at that, a nurse like slammed it shut, sort of like a kid. You don't want to be exposed to what's happening in here. You don't want to know what goes on in this room. So I heard, like, for just the briefest of moments, like, the actual sound of, you know, the shoving and the pushing and the... Ew. Do not want.
being born?
Yeah. I mean, it was something... It was very clearly the sound
disgusting.
Of something really big being shoved through something really small. Yeah. And it sounded like everybody was opposed to it, you know? she's taking me out to the door, and on the way out, I'd see this one open room... And it's like the thing with the stirrups, you know, the not a gurney, but whatever you call it, the reclining thing, like the sort of bed with the stirrups. And then there's like these weird cable-y things hanging from the ceiling. It was like it was like when you're backstage and you're going to open the curtain for the big night and you're pulling on the chain backstage and the curtain is opening. And I'm like, well, what one of those chain things for, Angie? That's weird. And she's like, oh, so that's for the abdominal apron. And then we just kept walking. And I was like, well. What do you
abdominal?
What do you mean? My response exactly, Brian.
The medical, the panis.
I said yes. I said what is the abdominal? Please to explain. What is that? And oh, how I wish that I had not asked that.
No.
She explained that it was. Here's how she described it for those who have not sussed out the meaning. When a woman of substantial carriage, a woman of size, would come in to be having a baby, she's there and she puts the legs up in the stirrup, reclining her back, presumably to give the OBGYN access to the pertinent area. Occasionally, if you are especially fond of your chocolate peanut butter bugles, you may be of sufficient size that your stomach is just sort of draping, not unlike an apron.
It's a bit of a flap.
Yeah, sort of down and just sort of concealing the area.
Gets in the way.
And gets in the way, and then it becomes a whole thing. It's like on your car, like if that little thing that holds up the hood doesn't work, and you're trying to like maybe change a spark plug while the other hand is holding up,
that's
the cover, thing over your Corolla, and you're just going like, I don't know, I need a hand here. The clamps come down, and apparently you put the clamps onto the abdominal apron, and then a guy says, okay, hold on, and then she described it as this is my sister now, who is she's a medical professional. My sister described it then as just like opening a big fleshy oyster.
Oh.
Wow.
Or one might think of it as maybe a fleshy horizontal garage door.
Now, maybe that hospital gets extra funding because my friend's a nurse, and she said in those situations, it's not even having babies. It's just getting things clean. She has to bring, like, six people in to elbow up and
Lord,
hold it all back.
To elbow up.
That's what she calls it. She's like, you hold this side,
Oh, Lord.
Oh, man. That's like one of those rag and stick people.
Exactly.
Where they just got to be.
If she knows about the clamps.
It's like that story we had about a guy who lost a remote control in one of his folds.
Our friend JD and EMT told him about they had someone come in complaining of back problems, and it turned out his skin had grown over the remote.
Wow. Okay.
And they found a remote under his skin.
I'm a fat girl, and I'm okay with that. But I'm so happy though that I don't think anyone's ever had to, like, hoist up my parts.
No.
I don't think we're taught you. No, we're not in the same ballpark.
No.
Like, no. We're talking, like, you plus 150 pounds.
There's a whole different scale going on.
Yeah.
So before we do the top five and wrap this up, big ass sandwiches, now that we've concluded the abdominal apron conversation. If you'd like to go help yourself to a...
if you're hungry now.
A heaping serving of lunch. But really, I mean this in all sincerity. I mean, congratulations to you guys. And
thank you.
You guys won not too long ago the Best Food Cart in Portland Award from Willamette Week.
It was the people's poll, though. It wasn't...
But that's the one you want to win.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. I appreciate it.
And how many food carts are there? I mean, as of, you know...
There's over 500.
So, I mean, that's, you know... Do you guys feel like you got in at just the right time? I mean, if you started now, you probably have to get on a waiting list to even get a cart now.
We got really lucky. I think I don't know. I don't know that we knew we were getting in at the right time, but, like, for instance, our spot, we picked our spot, and the 7 months it took us to build, we were going... There was nobody there. And in 7 months, we were the fourth cart.
Wow.
So, and there's, like, lines of people that want in our lot now. So, we got really lucky.
And we had Brett Burmeister of Food Carts Portland on, and he was saying
that
apparently, it's also just really extremely difficult, and there's a long wait now to just get a physical cart now, to actually, you used to be able to go on Craigslist and get broken down older ones and then fix them up and stuff, and it's like, no, they just don't exist
right
now.
The guys that built ours are awesome, and they're local dudes, Northwest Mobile Kitchens, but the thing I'm seeing more is just that they're finding more and more spaces to put them, but, you know, a little private lot off some suburban neighborhood the people are realizing as soon as they set up, like, there's nobody here.
Right.
Like, you have to have foot traffic. It's the same as anything else. Location, location, location.
Yeah, because nobody's going to stumble by it. And as much the food you love more than anything in the world, you're still only going to be able to drive out of your way for it so often.
Exactly.
You know, where you guys are like, I mean, you guys are sort of in the center of where the whole thing happens.
Yeah,
the
folks, really lucky.
The folks in the text box, look at a couple of people, they would like to be refreshed as to the location and your hours.
Okay. So, corner of Southwest 3rd and Ash. It's in a parking lot. Our serving window faces the Ash Street Saloon, a couple blocks away from Voodoo Donuts and Kell's on the other side. So, right down in what Brian calls the Barmuda Triangle. And I'm going to preface this with the fact that we are a very small operation, and we sometimes things happen. So, our hours...
Like kidney stones.
Yeah. So, our quote-unquote hours are 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday, noon to 4 Saturday... And then late nights, Friday and Saturday night, we open at 11 p.m. and we go till bar time. The thing that we try to do best is if we're not going to be open or if we close earlier, if anything changes, we update Facebook, we update Twitter. And if you're not on either of those, our Twitter feed also goes to bigasssandwiches.com. We try to consider the people who don't use social networking. So we do our best to keep people abreast of changes, but... Typically, those are the hours.
Fantastic. So, Big Ass Sandwiches, we will put that information up on rickemerson.com as well.
And the cookies are awesome.
The cookies really are amazing.
No, Dawn makes these cookies, and they're like the size of a tire, first of all. And they're just...
Seriously.
And that's kind of one of my weak... That's sort of my kryptonite is these
Me
cookies.
Too.
She brought in yesterday. She's like, I'm trying a brand new kind of cookie. You probably don't want to try them. And it was these like peanut butter things.
I'm trying to come up with a good peanut butter cookie.
They were really... No, they're fantastic.
I wasn't quite happy
those are my
with them.
Kind.
But
I don't know what you think it is that needs to be improved. I mean, it's like, what is this supposed to cure my gout? or something? I mean, they're just they taste fantastic. What do you want? It's a cookie.
Why don't these come with $10 each?
It's an inanimate object. It's not going to dance for you.
There should be a gold coin in the middle of this.
I wanted them to be just a little more peanutty flavoring. They weren't quite as peanut buttery tasting as I would have liked.
Well, and I like that we get to call them big ass cookies.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I like that. You know, I know, and I don't know where you come down on the whole crispness thing. I like mine to be very crisp. I mean, I'll eat cookies kind of period, but it doesn't really matter. But I like them if, you know, they have a little snap to them. That's fine with me. There's nothing wrong. They don't have, because if you get that, if you're trying to fake the just out of the oven thing, then you're just like putting a bunch of lard in there. And it just tastes terrible. Yeah. So, Big Ass Sandwiches, find out more about them at BigAssSandwiches.com or Twitter.com/BigAssSandwich.
Yeah, it was too, Big Ass Sandwiches was too long.
Oh, you went past the character limit or whatever?
Yeah.
I finally just yesterday started using like the twit pick thing. Quick, it sounded like pictures. It's a thing that will relay. You take a photo. And
of your junk.
Of your junk. Or, you know, whatever.
That shortens the link. And,
or,
like,
in fact, of the giant penis that's on the sidewalk out here. Did you guys see that when you came out?
I missed it completely.
When you go out on the corner here, I can't believe I'm directing people, like, actively to this.
Check it out.
Don't miss
Don't miss our giant chalk penis someone drew on the corner.
Somebody drew in the corner a penis. I swear to God, it's like 4 feet long by like a foot with chalk that has been impervious to rain and several days of foot traffic. It's just on the sidewalk, and it's a huge, like, angry penis.
Maybe
too.
Maybe they're coming back every night and redoing it.
Maybe, and it's got the full, and the definition is really, you know, and with the.
I'm surprised it's not getting longer and longer.
Yes,
it's got a curve to it.
It does.
List to port. But anyway, so I took it. But with TwitPic, it's a thing where you can take a photo, and then it will automatically generate a link to the picture. And then put that link on your Twitter feed. In other words, it automatically uploads the photo, it creates a link for the photo, and it puts that link in your Twitter feed.
Oh, see, I have to go into the Twitter box and, like, add the photo and then hope I can stay within 140 characters.
That's the thing. It's TWITPIC.com, TwitPic.
I'm on the old, you know, the dinosaur iPhone. So.
I learned it because Byron Beck was just following me around at one point, and I remember what we were doing, and he was just, like, snapping pictures relentlessly of me and then immediately putting them online, followed by Anna Griffin from the Oregon, who was here and who was doing it from the kitchen. We found out later because she was fascinated by our refrigerator, which contained only condiments, and our recycling bins, which contained only malt liquor.
I was actually just noting. I'm like, okay, there's American slices and some wine.
Well, we're just fans of Billy D. Williams, especially. So whatever puts money in his pocket. We'll do the top five in just one moment. Let's pay a final visit to the news desk with Dawn Taylor.
And now, from the news desk, this is Dawn Taylor.
Geek Watch.
Here is your Geek Watch for Tuesday right here on the Rick Emerson radio program.
Ugh, this high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
Just a television show, that's all, okay?
Right, but because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on
there. There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
Here is your Geek Watch for Tuesday.
Hershey wants a judge to let it keep on making virtual chocolate milk. The Pennsylvania chocolate maker filed a complaint earlier this summer asking a federal judge to decide whether an application it created for the iPhone and similar devices violates a copyright held by Las Vegas-based software developer Hotrix LLC. The two companies are battling over respective iPhone apps that involve making virtual chocolate milk. Hotrix filed a counterclaim Monday saying Hershey had improperly used its intellectual property, costing more than $12 million in lost profits and damage to its brand.
I think they're also improperly using the internet. I don't really know that that's what they envisioned when they created either the internet or the phone or chocolate. The idea that, unless I'm missing something.
Go make your own chocolate milk in real life.
I mean,
I don't understand why this would even be pixelated chocolate milk. For Christ's sake.
I realize that none of us probably even know what it is, and yet we're just passing judgment on it relentlessly, which is what we do.
Sitting and making a chocolate milkshake on your phone sounds like the stupidest waste of time I've ever heard.
See, here's the retarded thing, is that now I almost feel, it's like
it so bad right now?
No, it's like I'm just being inexorably drawn toward the phone like it has a tractor beam, just so I can download it and see what it does.
It's like the thing that fills with beer, and then you tilt your phone like you're drinking it, and it makes it look like you're drinking beer.
And here's the thing, Hotrix, who say that Hershey has stolen their milk thing. Also previously settled a dispute with Coors over a beer-related app.
Jesus, God.
You know,
Hershey's legal filing says the app it launched in October is much different, including its use of a red and white straw to drain the milk from the phone screen. Unlike the Hotrix application, they say, the Hershey's chocolate milk iPhone application milk cannot be drunk from the iPhone by tipping the phone, which is the only mechanism for drinking the virtual milk in the Hotrix application, but can only be drunk by use of our virtual straw.
All right, I want
according
you to
the lawsuit.
I want what you makes to, me mad is that our legal system is being used for this.
I want you to imagine for a moment that you are a guy living in Rwanda, and you are living in a hut that I imagine is probably being, even as we speak, burned to the ground. By someone who is then chasing your entire family, for the sole purpose of doing something horrible. This following a day where you gathered a series of small stones for your dinner. You somehow, luck onto a shortwave radio. And with that, you amazingly pick up the Rick Emerson Show broadcast, and you hear Don Taylor describing a significant battle being waged in our legal system right now for a phone that allows you to drink virtual beer with a virtual straw by tipping the phone near your mouth.
Right.
I like you, Rick. Okay. You offer good perspective.
I'm just saying, maybe they hate America for that reason. Maybe they don't. All I'm saying is, if they did, really, could you blame them? I mean, there are times when it all really does make a lot of sense.
Hotrix iMilk app costs $3.
What?
And it came first. It includes, you can get either plain milk or strawberry milk. Hershey's free app, however, has been downloaded more than 4 million times.
Here's what this
free.
Is like. This is the thing. This is the whole business of the app now, because I went to when I got the iPhone, I went online to the Apple Store and just spent untold hours sifting through 500,000 things. Mm-hmm. But you know what the App Store is like? It reminds me of in the early sort of burgeoning days of the internet, which maybe, I don't know, 96, 97, 98, when people were really sort of what's this World Wide Web business? Mm-hmm. And you started seeing URLs pop up for products that had no need for it and clearly weren't going to – were doing nothing interesting with it at all. I remember in 1997 seeing in the store a box of Velveeta cheese, and in a point size, I think, bigger than the actual name of the product itself. It said, now visit us at Velveeta.com. And just to see what it was, I went to the guy I knew at work who actually had an internet connection with him all the time. It was in the studio. And I said, is that thing on the internet? And he said, yeah. And I said, go to Velveeta.com for a second. And he went there. And I swear to Christ, it was just a picture of the cheese. That was it. And it just said Velveeta at the top. There was nothing. It didn't click. You couldn't point. You couldn't adjust. You couldn't enter anything. Nothing happened. It was a picture of cheese that they advertised in 50-point type in the front of the box.
Just so they could say they have a website.
Because they wanted to be part of this this new craze that the kids were all about.
Yeah.
See also the App Store. For the love of sweet God Almighty. All right, there's your Geek Watch for Tuesday.
By the sons of Warvan, I shall avenge you.
Next. Ooh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
To bring us back to where we began, I mentioned at the beginning of the segment with Lisa and Brian Wood from Big Ass Sandwiches, I mentioned that you and I had worked together at CBS, which then became Alpha, which then became a place I used to work. And
it's really fun to hear all the watch promos, by the way.
Oh, that 32 cents doesn't just that's not just for bugles, Lisa. It's not just for show. They didn't really ever lead to anything for various reasons. At the end of 2009, I had a couple of meetings with some of the folks at Alpha Broadcasting because they had this whole idea that. And that flagship product will be Rick Emerson, whatever. But I remember sitting in a conference room on more than one occasion with a senior manager who I will not identify at Alpha Broadcasting, but who spent 80% of the time we were in the meeting showing me the various flatulent sounds he could make on his iPhone. And then expressing some sort of confusion later on when I was I don't think we're on the same page here. I think we have different goals.
That's absolutely the guy who hired Ricker. I guarantee you.
God almighty. All right. Here is your top five for Tuesday.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
Counting is wonderful. Counting is marvelous. Counting's the best thing to do. Counting is happiness, counting is ecstasy. I love to count, don't you?
Lisa was just, you were just miming something with your,
I was singing.
All right, with your hand. From my peripheral vision, it looked like something.
Counting is, no, I went like this. We were singing along with count.
Okay, you were doing this sort of, you were doing the hand raise.
Ecstasy.
As though it were a goblet of, a goblet of victory being held by Ronnie James Dio.
Exactly.
On a silver mountain. Brian, you went headphones. I feel bad. Nah, you can't actually hear the.
I can hear it completely, perfectly clear through your headphones.
That's
from here.
Rick is dead.
Hi. Yes. All right. I have destroyed one of my senses. Hello there, Don Taylor. What was the impetus for this particular top five? The top five worst songs performed by an actor.
That I couldn't think of anything else after you texted me at 11:30 last night and said, "Hey, do a top five."
Well done. The mother of necessity, thy name is Rick, texting you. All right, these are the these are not the best. These are the on a list of terrible songs performed by actors. These are the toppermost.
To my mind, I'm sure again, like all top fives, this is arguable, but to my mind, these are my top five worst.
And you did have a rule here.
No Shatner.
All right, because that's just, it's like no Beach Boys on a car song list.
That's just, that fruit is just hanging too low.
All right. These are the top five worst songs performed by an actor in the opinion of one Don Taylor. What is the honorable mention, Don Taylor?
Honorable mention is She's Like the Wind, Patrick Swayze.
Oh. You mean oh.
Which I will say,
he's no longer with us.
I love Dirty Dancing. I have this unhealthy, ungodly love for Dirty Dancing. I will watch it anytime it's on TV. I've seen it like 300 times. That said, this song is abominable.
It is.
Yeah.
The song is
horrible. I believe he also wrote it as well.
Well, of course. I mean, he's a Renaissance man, Don. I mean, seriously, if you're Patrick Swayze and some guy at a record company is going, and we'll let you sing a song on the album, why would you not also take advantage of that opportunity to write a song? I mean, you know.
Who wrote this?
This is a Swayze original.
Yeah, Swayze wrote this as well.
Wow.
Yeah, it's horrible.
This sounds like that song that Michael Lowen wrote for Lindsay Lohan.
I just hear the engineer, like, more reverb.
Seriously. There's everything is in a wash and an echo.
Can you take the suck out in post?
This is sort of like, this is like something you would find in the trash can outside the studio where Chicago records.
Oh, yeah.
Outtake number 70. This text message says, I only wish Swayze had lived to put out his rap album.
Oh,
how much richer we would be.
Kind of glad that didn't happen.
Oh, wow. And the saxophone, too.
Yeah.
That's how you know it sucks. There's a saxophone.
A saxophone solo.
Yeah, you're not Kenny G, Patrick. I guess now he's not anything.
No.
Cheryl in the text box says, I hate that Swayze song, so why do I know all the words?
Sarah knows every single word.
Because you couldn't get away from it.
The thing is, I somehow managed to miss, and I was, when did this come out? When did Dirty Dancing come out? Like 80-something? Well, okay, so I guess I wasn't a DJ yet. By the time I got to be a top 40 DJ, they weren't playing this. They'd moved on from the Swayze era. Wow. This isn't good. There's nothing good about this.
Nope.
This is bad in every conceivable way.
He is essentially on key. You have to give him that.
At least recorded. I never heard of him live.
Well, this is before the auto-tune era, so I mean, unless they were really working it.
His voice is not terrible.
I mean,
that is one thing you can say for him.
Unless was just...
Who's the person that goes, just a fool to believe?
I think it's you.
No.
Who is it? Apparently.
No.
I don't really... I'm not really as familiar with the Swayze musical oeuvre as some.
That's like the only piece I remember is, I think, some girl, right? Some
I think
girl
so, towards the end. Yeah.
Hey, I just got another... Here's the thing about my iPhone 4. I just got another message about Squeaky Fromm sent to me.
Nice.
All right, well, there you go. I'm going to put that face down. It'll just be distracting. Can we be done with this song now?
Yeah, yeah. You're drunk.
No, that's like Anonymous Session Guy. A woman or a man?
That's a woman.
Is it
a woman?
Sort of like an Elaine Foley style, like a Paradise by the Dashboard Light style woman.
Exactly.
Maybe it is a guy.
I am fascinated by session musicians. That's a phenomenon that I find really, really intriguing. I talked to this guy Ron Dante a few years ago.
Yeah.
He produced some of Barry Manilow's hits, but he was also all of the Archies. Even the women. He was the Archies. But
my granddad was a session musician.
It's just fascinating. It's just, I mean, because it's like. Like, who was this? Like, was it just... Did they ask for this woman in the background? Or was it just whoever happened to be at work that did it? Like, you want to sing behind Patrick Swayze?
No.
All right.
You make really good money. So, you know, they get people who are... You're hired union musicians.
Wow.
My granddad worked with like Jerry Lewis and
apparently
Dean
Martin. that is singer Wendy Fraser.
It is a girl. Okay.
Is that a known? Is she somebody of note? Do you suppose?
I don't know.
All right.
So
well, there you go.
Like, I'm going to get you a record deal. Come sing on my song.
I improbably enough, we're still only the honorable mention. These are the
actually he originally wrote the song, by the way, for Grandview, USA.
What?
You don't remember Grandview, USA, the Swayze film? Grandview,
no.
Grandview,
USA. I was just finding out the years to say why buy a mattress anymore.
I don't celebrate the Swayze collection.
See Thomas Howell, Grandview, USA.
Really, if it's not Soul
Jennifer
Man, it's
Jason
not
Lee.
C. Thomas Howell to me.
Or Outsiders.
Both the Cusacks and Emma Walsh.
Actually, that's not even true because I've...
Or Red Dawn.
No, wait, are we talking Swayze or Howell now?
No, C. Thomas Howell.
Also The Hitcher.
Yeah.
I'll give you The Hitcher there. Yeah. You know, have you ever seen the movie Convoy?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No. You know, there's a chick in there who looks just like C. Thomas Howell. It's so unfortunate. Seriously, the female lead, it looks exactly like C. Thomas Howell. I remember watching that movie, movie Convoy, and there were three layers of surprise. One is, Kris Kristofferson's in this? The second was, Sam Peckinpah directed this? The third was, you know, like, I'm still watching this, but somewhere in there was, like, that chick looks just like... Like, I think I went so far as to look it up.
He was kind of a pretty man. when he was younger, he was like... You know, like I think Justin Bieber
speaks more poorly for her, really, I think,
yeah,
in that equation.
That's true.
All right. These are the top five worst songs performed by an actor. Don Taylor.
Number five, Heartbeat, Don Johnson.
From what album?
Heartbeat.
Are
is
you
that
sure
the name of the album?
I believe this is from Living the Book of My Life. That's the Philip Michael Thomas album. I'm sorry.
I believe the album is Heartbeat.
Is Heartbeat.
It's sad that you know that.
No, no, no. Living the Book of My Life is Philip Michael Thomas. Yeah. I used to know the name of Andrew Ridgely's first couple solo albums, but then I decided no one was ever going to ask about that.
I thought about putting a Philip Michael Thomas song on this list, and then again I thought, low-hanging fruit.
Piling on.
Same with Hasselhoff.
Wow. I can feel it sucking.
I remember the chorus, but I don't remember this part. Now I'm like revisiting. Everybody tells me
I can be. It's like he's in another room singing somewhere. Totally. They didn't want him too close to the microphone.
It's totally loaded with reverb also.
Well, that's the hallmark of the 80s.
Yeah.
I mean, to echo is to record in the 80s. I wonder if like he and Bruce Willis ever considered doing like a Bruno and Don Johnson tour together.
Well, the thing is, too, about some of the actors who have recorded stuff, Bruce Willis, not that terrible. Not great. Not as good
though.
As he thinks he is.
But just
ultimately
pointless
because he's obviously not a blues man and he's trying to do blues. But he doesn't suck enough that it's completely unlistenable. So that's the thing is that when I was looking at a lot of this stuff, some of these people, like there have been a lot of actors, like Minnie Driver released an album. You know what?
Has a really good voice.
She can actually sing.
Yeah.
You know? So some of these people really aren't terrible.
This sounds just like a Starship song.
This
I mean,
is
like
so bad.
Any Starship song from this era, from the Nothing's Gonna Stop Us Now period.
Ugh.
It's a total drum machine, too.
So I have a really hard time with music being made by one person and six computers.
I mean, I used to be like a real hard ass. I used to be a real purist about synthesized things or drum machines or whatever, but I think that then I got to a point where there was so much stuff in the radio that I realized I couldn't tell. If it was, you know, like with the advent of like Nine Inch Nails and Ministry and whatever, and I started thinking like, I can't even tell if this is, quote, real or if it's whatever. So that distinction, I think, matters maybe less to me now. This, my whole thing with this is, it sounds like this was just sitting around because they were going to use it as like a Wendy's jingle.
Yeah.
And Doctor's like, do you got anything I can, you know, sing over? And they're like, hold on a second. Let me loop this, you know.
Can You Feel My Heartbeat would be an awful song for a food commercial.
Yeah, I mean, it just sounded pre-produced.
Well, they were just going to switch the lyrics up to Can You Stop My Heartbeat?
I remember, guitar.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Ladies and gentlemen, the world's least threatening hard rock guitar solo. Even rock started to sound all synthy, and I mean, I remember hearing "Why Can't This Be Love" by Van Halen off the 5150 record, which is terrible. And I had a friend of mine; he was convinced that it was originally intended to be like a beer jingle, like a "Why Can't This Be Light" kind of a thing.
I would be surprised.
I mean, it all had that just totally plasticized feel to it. He's breaking it down. No.
Oh, right
he's
here.
Hold on. He's doing the '80s thing, yeah. Just drums and vocals here. Yeah. See also every Quiet Riot song ever recorded. Oh, yeah. Taking it up a step.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Wow.
This is the A&R man. He's nodding his head right now going, this is our single.
Yeah.
Right here. I can get this power rotation at Z today.
Oh, it's so bad.
And then you cut to the A&R guy, who in my mind, of course, looks like John Kalodner, and he's sitting on a couch going, hey, Jimmy, I'm telling you, the phones are burning up at this for Kiss, at Z, at Cube. The night phones on this are crazy. Younger demos cannot. They love Don Johnson.
You got to make it a power.
Also, I have some cocaine for you in this bag. And a trip to Maui. Will you play my record? Please, I'm in debt. I have alimony. All right, Jesus.
And you wonder why I got out of the business.
I don't, actually.
Yeah. It's all plainly right. Obvious.
These are the top five worst songs performed by an actor. Don Taylor?
Number four is the Bonanza theme song.
Jesus Christ.
And it's sung by Lorne Greene.
There's actual words to that?
No. There are indeed.
Welcome to the Ponderosa, my friends.
He does a little intro
of songs
here for you.
And stories about the American West, a land of legend, of romance, of friendship and loyalty and courage.
Shut up.
A motherlode of remembrance. A true motherlode, bonanza. Wow.
This is like that Erotic Adventures of Zorro trailer.
Shut up!
Awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, the Jordanaires.
We chased Lady Luck till we finally struck Bonanza.
Wow.
With a gun and a rope and a hat full of hope, we planted our family tree.
Holy.
A hat full of hope. Full of
by the way, anybody who's still wondering, like, why that 32 cents a day? So that we can bring you the unfiltered genius of Lorne Greene singing the Bonanza theme song.
Oh, my God.
Here in the West, we're living in the best bonanza. If anyone fights any one of us, he's going to fight with me.
See, like, who are they? Who are those people?
Those guys?
Those are the townies that the Cartwrights are protecting.
It's Michael Landon and the crew. No one works, fights, or eats like the right, boys of mine.
Yeah.
Here we stand in the middle of a grand bonanza. With a gun.
I wonder how many people it took to write this song.
One. He was probably wasted.
We need something in 5 minutes.
With a house full of friends with a rainbow ends, how rich can a fella be? On this land we put our brand.
Well, you're not kidding. This guy really everything cannot rhyme. Sing.
No, no.
Well, of course, if it doesn't rhyme, it's not a song. It's not art if it doesn't rhyme, Lisa. I wonder if this was a full album, like the many musical moods of Lorne Greene, or if it was like a single, like that came on the back of like a Wheaties box or something.
The only thing I can think of that rhymes with Bonanza is Costanza.
Yes, you know,
Tony Danza.
He hates Tony Danza.
And again, I almost put Tony Danza on here because he did an album, and you know something?
Shut
a surprisingly
up.
Good singer.
He is Italian.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Those guys can sing.
I don't even know what you were talking about now. Good God Almighty. All right, so there you go. That was Lorne Greene, improbably enough, singing the Bonanza theme song. These are the... We're halfway through. God damn. All right, these are the... And those are the three best, allegedly, because we're working our way up.
Yeah, we're working our way. They get worse as we go along.
These are the top five worst songs performed by an actor. Don Taylor?
Number three, Put Your Mouth on Me by Eddie Murphy.
Oh, nuh-uh.
Party All the Time is the one everyone knows.
I'm stopping
That's
this right out of the gate
I
because I have a question for Ryan and Lisa. Okay, I was trying to identify something. Do you ever try to identify something and you realize... You know it, and if you could expose the other person to it, they'd know it, but there's no name for it. Here's an example of what I'm talking about.
I do that all the time with him.
For example, there's no name for this to the best of my knowledge, but I am doing a gesture with my hand that looks as though I am, I don't know, twirling a hula hoop around my finger to hurry up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
What's that called? You just said the hurry up thing. People maybe will know what you mean, but
it's
maybe
called
not.
Wrap it up.
Wrap it up.
Is that
yo.
Called wrap it up?
That's what I've always, wrap it up.
That's a thing I wonder about all the time.
It's
is
sign
there,
language for, I mean, you know, it's everybody else that I know knows it as wrap it up.
So fair enough. And so
or,
that's.
Or move it along.
That's the sort of thing I wonder about, where there is no agreed upon name for something, but we all know it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. This song contains one of those things, and it is this sort of, it's like this orchestral stab or burst that I think was a preset on like every Roland keyboard sold in the 80s because everything that was even vaguely hip-hop contained this sort of sound.
Yeah.
And you're going to hear it right at the beginning. This is
I've never heard this.
Right there.
Yeah. That's the horn blast.
It's the horn. Yeah, it's a horn blast on the keyboard.
And it's like the same one. It was. It's like
Paula Abdul.
It was. That's where we heard it last. It was on Straight Up, and it was on Forever Your Girl too. Yeah.
I believe
there's a little Bobby Brown in there.
Yeah, Belle Biv DeVoe also used that.
Yeah.
I wonder if it is actually the same sort of, not even a sample, but like if there was, because just as everybody uses Pro Tools, there was this thing, the Roland synthesizer was really, really popular in the late 80s. And I wonder if it is actually like the same button.
We have a Casio keyboard and it has the like the names of all the, you know, and it's like trumpet blast.
Samba.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you can get a voice going doot, doot, doot.
Ah, the genius of Eddie Murphy.
Never heard this.
That's an oxymoron.
Sounds like something else.
Yeah. It sounds like Prince.
And Michael Jackson.
Yeah, but I mean, there's a specific song that this sounds like.
Oh, no, no sexy noises, please.
Yeah, that's weird.
No. This is why... you know, as the saying goes, that if you're, you know, if you're dumb, you surround yourself with smart people, as I think you might have noticed with me. If you're smart, you surround yourself with smart people who disagree with you. This is why you need to do that, because there needs to be somebody in the room that goes, no, Eddie, that's a bad idea.
Yeah,
the song is not only awful, it's nigh unintelligible as well.
Well, because they must have figured out at some point, just put him low in the mix.
Yeah.
Look, he's so high, he'll never know. Just mix him further down.
And then you hear him saying, put your mouth on me.
Yeah. Everything in the 80s, I think, was meant to be like a Trident jingle or something. Because you can totally see, you know, like really freshly scrubbed high schoolers, you know, going out on a date or like at the amusement park or something, and like one handing Trident to the other and then looking at the camera and it freeze frames.
There's no way that he's really singing that in those octaves.
Yeah.
What?
I think we're supposed to listen to the band now, Brian.
I thought he said put something in my face.
Well, that's possible as well, I suppose. He was thinking about the transvestite hooker that he would pick up later that night.
It just sounds like somebody trying to leave a tight parking space and just keeps smashing into someone's bumper.
That's a great analogy.
Okay. I wonder how much money was spent to create this album. And it was an album, but I mean, have no doubt about that. This was probably like the first of a musical trilogy, you know, that he was planning on. It was going to be sort of a concept that he would, you know, stretch out over five or six records over the course of a decade.
Or maybe he was just putting this together as some sort of a tax shelter. If he lost a lot of money on this, then he'd be a little bit better off for the next fiscal year.
He didn't want to go all MC Hammer on everybody.
It was just a reason for him and his buddies to be sitting in a studio doing too much cocaine at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Seriously.
I know, let's call it, put your mouth on me.
I'm going to tell you about something called a shell company, Eddie. Now, we need something that's guaranteed to lose money.
Don't worry, you'll get it back.
Wow. Oh. All right.
It is. It's okay, like DeMarge meets Prince meets Morris Day.
Stop. These are the top five. You really weren't lying about this. The top five worst songs ever performed by an actor. Don Taylor, what might number two be?
Number two is Girl, It's All Right by Mr. Steven Seagal.
I didn't even know this existed.
I didn't either.
Blues man Steven Seagal.
Does he sing? He played a show up here, right? About a year ago?
And then he kicked everybody's ass right afterwards.
This is from his 2005 film... Into the Sun, which featured songs from his album Songs from the Crystal Cave.
Wow.
Wait.
Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen,
can he even sing?
Sean Mullins.
And I want you to stay.
It's trying to be Eric Clapton.
Wow. If you close your eyes, you can see Dennis Constantine. I'm sorry. That's a mean thing to say. That was mean to me. And that was an inside joke, too.
I'll tell you later.
I was just going to say, this does seem very much like a Kink Afternoons here in the Rose City.
Here's the thing. It's an awful song, but he can sing. If he's actually singing.
I can't imagine. Here's the thing. I don't think there is such a thing, you know, auto-tune is obviously really widely used now, and Kanye West notwithstanding, it's used most of the time in ways that you don't ever notice. I mean, auto-tune, when used properly, it's invisible.
Yeah, I just mean pitch correcting.
Yeah. But it's like with this, like a vanity project like this, there's no way they're bringing in outside singers because they have in their head this idea that you are a genius and you're going to let the world know that. They don't understand the many facets you have, Steven Seagal.
I think you hit it with Sean Mullins, though. That I was a traffic, an afternoon drive traffic reporter on the hits of the 80s, 90s, and today.
Oh, lucky you.
Everybody. I could totally hear this on that radio station.
Oh, yeah. No, it's...
New one from Steven Seagal, everybody. What?
But I mean, if you just said, like, if you just told people this is John Mayer, they'd be like, oh, it's not so bad, I guess.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so...
Get a load of these lyrics here. Hold on.
He's got a little...
This is the kind of thing one might see in a movie.
Wow.
Oh, the breakdown.
Oh, and then, of course, if you have no soul, hire the black chick singer in the studio down the hall to come in and wail behind you so that, like, some of her soul can osmose into your body. Jesus. Okay,
he's
so...
He's totally trying to sound like Dave Matthews, like, I've got a raspy voice.
Totally. Well, yeah, you know, it's because he's been around, Lisa. He's seen some things. He's not the wide-eyed innocent of Hard to Kill.
Kelly Brock left me.
He's, you know, he's...
That ponytail's seen some miles.
This has lyrics that are like, so let the mountains all cry, let the sky fall down. We can't live in the past, and the future won't last.
Oh, my God. Okay. I wrote that poem in third grade.
I won't play it here, but I will say that I wanted to make sure it was here. I mention this now because there's going to be 1,000 people texting me about it. When you said you heard that Steven Seagal was here to play a show, I'll just leave it at this, that when he was here for that show, which is Dante's, we had him on the show.
Oh, no.
We interviewed him. And by we, I mean I.
Wow.
And when I say I mean because Sarah and Tim were unable to control their laughter. And if you listen to the Steven Seagal interview, in which he sounds, I mean, it's like a man barely awake. It's like his jaw had been wired shut, and then also they had just hit him with horse tranquilizers right beforehand. And I do this big, and I didn't know. I'd never heard him play. I'd never heard him really interviewed. And I was like, ladies and gentlemen, you know, martial arts legend, and you know, he's a music. He's awesome. Steven Seagal. And then he comes. I think I might actually have the first 10 seconds or something of that right here. The whole thing is at rickemerson.com. It's in the interview archives. And then you hear me. I think I'm bringing him on actually with this song in the background, like an idiot.
Oh, no.
And then I do this huge buildup, and then you hear him, you know, say like hello, but not even that energetic. And you can hear the train wreck start to happen. You can hear, and you, especially as you've worked in radio, you can hear in the pause that happens next. Everything is there. Everything is in the pause.
And you just need to stop it right there. And
I should have just gone, I'm sorry, we're having a bad connection. Click. You can hear me trying to hold it together. And if you listen to this whole interview, which is like 12 minutes of just like glorious hell, you can hear Sarah just trying with all... We were in that tiny room at the coin tower, trying with all her might not to burst into laughter because there would have been no way to hide it. There was no cough button or anything.
Oh.
Let's see if I can just get just the opening here.
Steven Seagal.
All right, so this is me. This is me bringing him on.
This is from Steven Seagal.
Oh my God, he's calling!
So we're all excited about it, of course.
All right.
All right, I'm nervous.
Okay.
Turn the music.
What? The? Okay, fine.
Rick Emerson,
uh oh.
Screening in the room because you know we were in this little closet.
We're all giddy
with
it. Rick Emerson Show. It's 503-733-2. 970. You can also email if you like. It's rick@rickemerson.com. All right, we've been talking about this for a few days now.
I'm like
a good
pumped.
Friend Susan Reynolds at CBS Radio Marketing. Help with this together. Coming to Dante Sunday, May 28th. Steven Seagal and Thunderbox are going to be
Thunderbox.
New album Mojo Priest. Let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show. Actor and musician Steven Seagal. Steven, how are you, sir?
Hey, it's Miles Copeland here. I'm just going to pass you.
Oh, and all my bills.
I forgot there was a fail there. All right.
Yeah.
Look at that. Oh, and I did this whole intro. All right.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Steven?
Yes, sir.
Hey, how are you doing, Steven?
I'm doing good.
Wow.
Good.
All right, then. So I had this whole...
It's, any, do you see
say,
what I'm
all
saying?
Right, then.
It's,
that.
It's like he's just. It, I don't even. If he was asleep, if he was.
In Thunderbox,
if he was high, just his Mojo Freeze, his greeting one more time here, and I think it's the road manager.
Yeah.
Again.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Miles Copeland here. I'm just going to pass
you. Oh, and all my build up for nothing.
Here you go.
Look at that. Oh, and I did this whole intro. All right.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Stephen?
Yes, sir.
Hey, how are you doing, Stephen?
I'm doing good.
Doing real good.
Good.
All right, then. So I had this whole gigantic build-up I did, and then it was for nothing because you weren't on the phone. But that's okay. You'll just have to insert a fantastic introduction here.
Okay.
Oh, my.
So you're coming to...
And that's where you just should have pulled the
plug. I'm going to go listen to the whole thing.
Wow. Dude, it's awesome. And then at that moment, Sarah is literally doubled over with laughter.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, Tim. And the thing is about Tim, because he's just, you know, he's so staid most of the time, that when... If you ever have somebody that, like, when they begin to laugh,
yeah,
then it's just, like, game over. Tim, he was just so reserved, and he's just such, you know, I'm a newsman.
Yeah.
Tim was also, he was walking around the studio, sort of, like, hunched over a little bit, trying to laugh, like a belly laugh, but soundlessly. And it was like, and I was doing this thing, I shut my eyes, and I was, like, looking down at the square of paper on the counter, because I knew if I even saw them in my peripheral vision, I would explode with laughter into the phone. It really is worth tracking. That whole interview was at the Rick Emerson Archive. So
it sounds almost creepy.
Hey, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. I guess he's. I did not go to Dante's that night, but apparently his set was. Apparently his set was fantastic. So, yeah. So he was here to promote like this album with Thunderbox.
Maybe that's why he was trying to be like mysterious blues man.
Jesus. All right. I've seen things.
We still have one left.
No man should see. It's a long road with no turning back. Yes.
Come on, these Kelly are the Brock.
These are the top five. I have to turn it off. These are the top five worst songs performed by an actor. Don Taylor, what's the worst song ever performed by an actor?
This would be the magnificent Mr. Crispin Glover doing his song Clowny Clown Clown.
I love that you picked that. Let's hear it for the 808.
I was walking on the ground, I didn't make a sound, then I turned around and I saw a clown, had a frown, stood on a mound, started barking like a hound.
Wow.
Somebody bought him a rhyming dictionary for Christmas.
I love Christmas.
When I came to it, I found he showed me something that was brown, so he became great friends.
Why does this exist?
Late in life,
I have no idea.
Where did it come from?
He has a band.
Yeah, he has a band.
This
I can't
is
remember
his band?
What they're called, but he has a band. And
they're called the guys who want Christopher McGlover's money.
No.
Exactly.
He has a Tim Hansen, the guy with his best deference, loves Christopher McGlover.
Well, there's something for everybody.
I think he's fascinating and weird.
Oh, yeah. No, he really, I actually met him once in L.A. I was working at an art gallery, and he had a little thing of his art, which was just insane.
Yeah.
And he was really nice. He was a very pleasant man, and I enjoyed him very much. Also, the remake of Willard that he starred in, which is really terrific. He did a cover of Ben for that and a video that goes along with it, which is magnificent. It is really, really terrific.
What was the name of his band?
Take a look.
Deep down,
I can't remember.
His cover of These Boots Are Made for Walkin' is also worth looking for too.
Not as much. Mr. Mm-hmm. Farr, I'm gonna go smoke a cigar.
Okay,
In 1989, he released the album "The Big Problem Does Not Equal the Solution; The Solution Equals Let It Be."
That makes perfect sense.
That was produced by Barnes and Barnes, and that
by
is
Barnes and the Fishheads guys.
And that's what this is from.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right. Well, suddenly it's all making so much more sense. It's the clarity is emerging.
He also that album also featured his cover of "These Boots Are Made for Walkin'" and of Charles Manson's "I'll Never Say Never to Always."
Oh,
okay,
wow.
Then. That's a creepy song in and of itself. Have you ever heard that?
No.
"I'll Never Say Never to Always." This is so we can end this with yet another discussion of Charles Manson. I have the Charles. You know, they put out an album, Charles Manson and the Manson Girls.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called "The Love and Terror Cult," and it's like 12 songs. And I'll Never Say Never to Always is a song. It's a sing-song sort of nursery rhyme composition that just the Manson girls themselves sing without Charlie, so it's like extra spooky because it's like these sort of like California like Breck girls. The only thing I can compare it to, I'll bring it tomorrow, Don. I'll make it your ringtone.
All right.
Is that it sounds like that creepy song that the kids are singing in The Birds while the birds are gathering on the little playground thing next to Suzanne Plachette. Where the kids and the birds are going like, na 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 na, and Suzanne Plachette looks over and there's like a billion birds on the thing. It sounds like that song, but it's an original and also Manson Girls.
Oh, nice.
Let's end the show now. All right, Lisa and Brian Wood from Big Ass Sandwiches.
Thank you so much.
Third and Ash. Really, I thank you for coming on, and I mean this. It always sounds kind of... I don't know. I sometimes feel I lack sincerity when I say this, but I really am just very, very astonishingly happy for you guys because,
thank you.
I mean, you know, because like you know, we're doing our own thing here, and it's all well and good, which I'm not, you know, which I don't say with like false whatever. But you guys, like a year ago, as like things looked really bad in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. I mean, the economy, where it took a lot of cojones to just say, like, you know, not only am I not looking for another regular job in my traditional field, I'm actually going to start my own business and in a notoriously stressful industry and during the recession. Suck that. and then a year later, I mean, it really is just like everybody who goes there is an instant convert. They tell everybody about it. It is, I could not be more proud of you guys. So congratulations.
Thank you, man.
Thank you.
Big Ass Sandwiches, they are at the corner of 3rd and Ash. They are open today, and today being Tuesday, open until...
They're actually closed now. We are closed now. Well, what's at 4 o'clock?
No, it's on my part. I was
but,
just...
11 to 4, Monday through Friday. The hours are all listed at BigAssSandwiches.com.
Awesome. All right, so and whenever it is you're listening to this, if they're not open, you go online, find out when they're open, you got to go. You got to go try it. So be sure to join us tomorrow when our guest will include Kelly Clark from Willamette Week, Thursday, Anna Griffin from The Oregonian, and Friday, Mr. Dan Clark talking about Pirate Fest 2010.
Yeah.
We want to thank our guests, Lisa and Brian Wood from Big Ass Sandwiches at the corner of 3rd and Ash. The Rick Emerson Show comes to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk, it is Don Taylor, Advanced Technology and Magic provided by Thomas Gill, Executive Producer Bruce Agler. Chief of Staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show made possible by a generous grant from y'all. It is Tuesday, September 14th, 2010, and that is The Frequency. Kenneth, as always, thank you for listening. Be safe. See you all tomorrow. Bye now.
Attention broadcasters in the greater Portland area. Your daily show prep is now concluded. Thanks for listening.